Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Go! Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Alrighty, it's an interesting, engaging little hour there. Mark and I, you know, we largely conduct our debates from show to show. And I understand what he's saying, and you know, we are the least hated in Iran of any kind. I agree, Mark. I agree completely and totally and absolutely. But I also constantly return to the theme that bushes are bushes, and bushes are like a dog returning to its vomit. George Sr., Pappy, son of the Nazi enabler Prescott Bush, George Sr. dumped the war on Bill Clinton right before he left office. And these people follow the same M.O., generation after generation after generation after generation. So then I'm a little, you know, less optimistic. I still think there's every chance the missiles will fly in the fall and after the November election, especially if Obama is elected. Because that's the kind of filthy, nasty, double-crossing, dirty tricks, low-down, un-American, yellow-bellied, snake's belly in a wagon rut conduct that we have come to expect from this low-rent, low-class gang of the Mayberry Machiavellis, as they were called. But, you know, that's just me, and I am a pragmatic pessimist, because by being a pessimist, I find that I am never disappointed and occasionally pleasantly surprised. So that's where I am on it. 3 minutes after the hour as we begin this Wednesday evening edition of Head On, and it being Wednesday, you know, it's not just any ordinary program. Oh, no! No. Brothers and sisters, come on down the blood-red carpet. Kneel before the altar here in the Cathedral of Common Sense. Lay your hands upon the subwoofers and feel the healing rays a-blowing through you. Hallelujah! How glory! It is prayer meeting. Prayer, the choir master. Choir master, where are you? Get with it, choir master.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree.
Sing it, everybody.
I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity, yeah. Whoever said religion should be free?
Hallelujah, amen, and amen. Brothers and sisters, thank you, choir master, for that lovely, lovely rendition. And this being prayer meeting, Lord God, Billy Bob, we got a bunch of places to go tonight, but let's start with, there's a couple of places I want to go right early on. But let's start with some basic data. You know, just boring numbers. And again, I don't walk around with my turban with the moon and stars on it and my little cloudy crystal ball that half the time when I rub it, it says answer hazy, ask again later. But I've done it again. What did I say? I think I said it last night. I said that John McCain need not worry, that all this Sturm und Drang about the evangelicals not following and not getting in line was just a bunch of stuff to divert us, to divert our attention and make Democrats think that they don't have to work their little asses off to get Barack Obama into the White House in November. Didn't I say that? I think I said that. Well, yea, verily, I am confirmed. Ha! Hallelujah, I am confirmed. New data out from the Gallup people. Headline: Gallup guru, McCain doing fine with religious voters. Fine with religious voters. This out of USA Today. Frank Newport is a Gallup pollster, and he has examined presumptive yada yada yada. He has examined John Sidney McCain third's standing among what he refers to as highly religious voters. Now I think that's a little bit of a BS'd up category, because I know lots of highly religious people that have no intention of voting for John Sidney McCain III. But what he says is still telling, and it confirms what I have already said. Much of the content of these articles depends, and he's talking about a wave of news reports that say that McCain has a problem with the evangelicals. You know, I shared one of them with you. Oh, John McCain won't meet with Billy Graham. Oh, death upon him. Oh, Lord God, smite John McCain, for he will not meet with Saint Billy. You know, that kind of crap. And the stuff that goes on, I saw another one today. You know, what's John McCain's problem with the evangelicals? What it is the evangelicals want some bowing and scraping. Because that's what they've come to expect. It's God knows what they adore. It is beautiful for their fundraising. And John McCain hasn't, to their perception, done enough of it yet. But that's window dressing. So analyzing these articles, Frank Newport said, much of the content of these articles depends on anecdotal evidence and opinions of the few leaders or pundits the reporters or columnists could find to interview. The data show a strong bias towards the GOP candidate among highly religious Americans is in essence the starting point for any modern American presidential campaign. Newport says, my review of the data suggests that McCain so far is no exception. He has a very big margin over Barack Obama among highly religious voters across the board. What did I tell you? Listen, again, if I was better at shameless self-promotion, I'd be telling you that I figured this out with half my brain tied behind my back and talent on loan from God. But this ain't rocket science. Somewhere along the way, John McCain will make a speech where he'll mention the poor little fetuses. Okay? Fetuses. And once he's mentioned the poor little fetuses, and the nasty ACLU, and then we'll get a little dig in at gay people, you know, and say, family values! And like cockroaches scurrying when the light goes on, the little fundies will come creeping and crawling out of their hollers and out of their fundy churches, and they will run. They will not walk. They will not crawl. They will, by God, run to the polling place to cast their vote for John Sidney McCain III. I don't know if anybody else has figured that out, but I have, and you heard it here first. I don't know if anybody else has the guts to say that, with very few exceptions. You can hear it here on the horn. You can hear it from Mike Malloy. But I don't know if any, does anybody else have the, no. Mm-mm. No. And I even got a thing today talking about the Democratic National Convention, and I'm going to say something about that here in a minute, too. I'll just say it now. I've given up all hope of us going to the Democratic National Convention. Okay? I just have. Ain't going to happen. And it's not going to happen for want of desire. We have had our request for credentials in for something on the order of 24 days now. And not even so much as a return email. Now, in order to get those credentials, we had to send in full name, address, date of birth, place of birth. And we did all of that. And we did it in a timely fashion when we were told to do so, and we have not heard jack squat since. So I think it's pretty obvious that they don't want the kind of straight up factual reporting and honest working people opinion that you get when you tune into the horn. So that's it. Ain't going, ain't happening, ain't. And that'll be the last I say about it. And I regret it, but it's not my fault. It is not Guy's fault. It is not Mark's or Peter's or anybody else's fault who worked so hard to make this happen. It just ain't gonna. And I think that tells you a little bit about the gatekeepers of information, even on our side of the discussion and the debate. So there's a beginning point. I got a couple of lights blinking here. I hate to keep people on hold, especially if they're on their nickel, or ours, for that matter. So we will go immediately to the phones, but I got a stack tonight that I want to get to. Your calls always take precedence, but Lordy, there is a bunch of material. Hey, who have I got?
Brother Bob!
Oh, Brother Vince?
Hey, what's up?
I don't know it. How about you?
Oh, nothing. I just had to call in. I have round two of the liberal and the evangelical.
Oh, dear God, and you've been saving it for prayer meeting. Well, come on down and confess.
Actually, this just happened today.
Oh.
My boss, the guy who owns the company, went on vacation this week and asked me if I wanted to work with his brother this week because he figured I needed the money, and I do, so I said yes. And we went out to do an irrigation job today, which I have decided I hate. Sitting out there in 100-degree heat, digging trenches, out in the mud, fixing broken pipes, pain in the rear.
All right.
So just to set up the picture. So we're sitting here, it's 100 degrees. We're dog tired. We've been doing this for probably about an hour and a half now, just digging the stupid irrigation line up and digging and digging, and we're both sweating. So Vinny, he calls me Vinny, or he calls me Novak, whatever. So we're sitting here, and he's like, "So Vinny," I'm like, "Yeah, Gary, who are you going to vote for president?"
Oh, God.
And Bob, if I had any brains at all, what I would have done is said somebody or Mickey Mouse or some other...
Bob Barr. I'm voting for Bob Barr, the libertarian candidate.
Ron Paul, somebody. No, what did I say?
You told the truth.
I told the truth. I go, "Obama." And he goes, "Oh, Lord." I'm like, "What's wrong with Obama?" And he launches into this tirade that began with, "Well, you know the un-American man is a Muslim."
Right off the top.
That was the first.
He's a Muslim.
He's a Muslim, exactly. About that tone of voice, too. You know, tone of voice with the accent.
Hey, I grew up down there. I know, you know.
I wish I was making this up. You know that un-American man is a Muslim, and I'm like, "Where'd you hear that?"
Church.
Well, he is. And I'm like, "Okay, where did you hear that?" I mean, he's not a Muslim. He goes to a Christian church. Well, where's his father from? Lebanon. Guess what? I'm from Poland. That doesn't make me Jewish or German. You know? Hey, guess what? Most of my family line on the other side of the tree is Native American Inuit. I don't run around going, beating on totem poles.
Haven't had any whale blubber in a while.
Nope. No, I haven't. Well, and then he goes on, you gotta understand too, I'm trying to work at this point in time. At this point, I'm trying to just tune it out, because this is technically my boss here, and I'm trying just to, I'm sitting here inwardly just going, crap, why did I open my big mouth, you know?
Wait, Vince, okay? Please understand that if you had said somebody, or ain't sure if I'm a gonna, or anything like that, it wouldn't have changed anything, okay? Because this guy wants to spread the filth. If he thought there was any chance that you were going to vote for anybody except God's anointed John Sidney McCain III.
No, he doesn't like McCain.
Oh, no. He's not. Yeah, I know. No, that's what they say. But like I said, they will march lockstep.
Vote for him.
Yeah.
But he don't like him. And I can accept that. Kind of like I didn't like Clinton. I was going to vote for her. You know,
yeah.
She had been the nominee.
Yeah, it wasn't your first choice, but yeah.
And even Obama wasn't my first choice. I wanted Edwards. Bluntly honest with you.
Yeah, well,
but anyways,
I started out with Kucinich. I defaulted to Edwards, and I wound up with Obama. You know, yeah.
So we're sitting here digging and whatnot, and I mean, basically, we started talking about the separation of church and state, and you can't even have prayer in schools, and they're trying to, the liberals want to make it so we can't preach against the homosexuals in church.
You know, when they bring up that prayer in schools, Vince, I've done this a million times, and it always stops them right in their tracks. The next time, and you know, maybe there won't be a next time, but if somebody ever tries to bring that prayer in schools business up, say, you have obviously never seen a ninth grader in algebra class before the test who didn't study. Because they are praying for all they're worth, and nobody's stopping them. Jesus, please just let me get a C. Just a C, Jesus.
You know, and if I hadn't have been, because at this point I'm kind of sitting here flustered and trying not to just lose my, because... Be honest, the way this guy is talking, what I really want to do is scream at him, where the bleep did you get these bleeping talking points, you Rush Limbaugh listening.
Bleep. Yeah, oh yeah.
But this is my boss. So, what I'm doing instead is just kind of mentally keeping myself going. If you had any sense, you'd have avoided it to begin with and said McCain. It made you a liar, but at least then you could dig.
Yeah, but see, you still would have gotten your break, because he would have stopped to tell you how glad he was that you had the common sense to vote for McCain, because that Obama is a Muslim. That's what I'm trying to get across here, Vince. This wasn't about your vote. This was about him getting to say it.
Well, in any event, so...
He wanted to make sure, because that's the way this viral business has spread.
You know what really threw him for a loop, though? When he started going on the un-American thing, I said, well, what makes him un-American? Well, he sat in that church for 20 years. I'm like, now 2 seconds ago, you were just telling me he's a Muslim. Come on, you can't have both.
Oh, did you do that?
Yes.
Oh, that's beautiful.
The second he said that, I said, well, you were just telling me he's a Muslim. Either he was a Muslim and he's evil because he's a Muslim, or he sat in Jaya Mara's right, whatever the heck the guy's name is, I can't say it right now, or he sat in that church for 20 years and he's anti-American because he listened to him say that crap. Never mind, that's not true. I'll get to that in a second, was what I said at the time. And I said, but come on, you can't have both.
Oh, that's a grand thing. Steam come out of his ears? Did he begin to vibrate like a struck tuning fork, speak in tongues?
Yeah, he did. You guys said, bleep, bleep. It sounded like Porky Pig there.
Bleep, 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 bleep. Yep. It's gorgeous.
You know, and that's when he kind of course, the second I hit him with something like that and he couldn't figure out what to say to rebuke something, well, then, standard Republican tactic, change subjects. And I kind of let him back to it a couple of times. He changed it again. You know, kind of like a cat playing with a mouse, although I couldn't have as much fun with it as I normally would have.
Yeah. Oh,
it being, you know, my boss and all.
Right. And you can bet your ass that your real boss now knows that he's got a fifth columnist digging trenches.
Honestly, I don't know how much it is, because what it is they're brothers.
Oh, yeah. But you know what? I got to tell you, Vince, ever since our last conversation, I can't drive by a Wendy's without visualizing some truckload of hot, sweaty guys coming in from taking lunch on a landscaping job, sitting there having to pray over their food before they can go out of the drive-thru. I mean, some of these stories just stick with me, Vince, and that's one of them. You know, one of these days they're going to bust out in tongues on you, and then it's going to get real weird. If they
he's been trying to get me to come to his church too, and you know I've just been kind of like I'm busy, and you know, but I don't know, man.
No, next time they try that one. Now here's a suggestion. You say, hey, you remember when George Bush said it was uniquely American to work three jobs? Yeah. Well, see, I work one of my jobs on Sunday, so I'm sorry I can't come to your church because I work 7 days a week.
So yeah. Anyways, and the thing was, is I was like, well, what's Obama's position on this? What's Obama's position on this? He couldn't tell me. He doesn't know jack squat about him. That irritates. I mean, if you want to be willfully stupid, I can't help that.
But he doesn't think he's willfully stupid, Vince. He thinks he is an informed voter because he has sat in the pews and he has been told by his minister that Obama is a Muslim. And they've talked about it, you know, out in the vestibule before the services started. And they've talked about it in the line at the cafeteria that everybody races to, you know, because the best preacher is the one who winds up 5 minutes before 12 so everybody can get out to lunch. No, he thinks he's informed. He's not willfully stupid in his own book. Now, he knows that he knows he's a Muslim, and he knows that we're all going to be praying to Mecca right after he takes the oath of office on the Koran.
That was about the argument, yes. I sat there and I'm like, man, you were sitting here spewing talking points straight off of Fox News and CNN and Rush Limbaugh, and he's like, well, and I throw CNN in there so they don't just think I'm bashing. I try and make it an equally.
Well, that's topic. Okay. You can prove that it comes out of CNN. I mean, yeah, just go to Media Now.
I'm sure if I looked, I could find it. You know, and he's like, well, you know, he's like, you know, well, I don't watch any of those, and I'm like, well, then you're listening to someone who does.
Yep.
And then I was like, you know, tell you what, you've got the internet, go look. You know, I said, you want to sit here and say, well, he sat in that pew for 20 years. I said, why don't you go look at the actual transcripts that church has of those sermons up on its own website. Got news for you, pal. None of that stuff even starts coming out until about the last year or two. But, of course, he's not going to look because that would...
It would challenge his worldview. It would challenge the fragile little eggshell that is his reality.
There you go.
Yeah. But
sometimes I hate living where I do.
Yeah, I know. I know. But you know what? You can't get away from it. You could live, and I'll bet you a lot of you in the chat room would back me up. You could live in Boston. and you'd still hear it. You cannot get away from it. This is an American Civil Cold War. It really, really is, Vince. You know, I used to say, are we approaching? Aren't yet? No, no, no. We are in a Civil Cold War. And it is unavoidable. It is unescapable. And no matter where you go, somebody is going to... And, you know, okay, this is not me going, hey, your kids get off my lawn or any of that kind of stuff. I got a couple of years on you. It's been going on for a while. You know, I remember being the 17 years old senior in high school. It's 1980. And I'm railing against Ronald Reagan. And people are telling me that, you know, you just don't understand because you ain't been there. You're just a kid. I mean, I was in law school when I was George Herbert Herbert Bush got elected and got thrown. Me and my best buddy got thrown out of a bar for booing every time they showed George Bush's face. You know, it's been going on for a long, long time.
Let me ask you this.
All right.
I hate to say it. I know I've been talking about the gains the Democratic Party around here has made. And it has. You know, now instead of like 1.1% of the people, we might have a whole one. But if that's what the situation is, and God, and maybe it's just the people I'm dealing with at this moment. But if the majority of people are like this, what the heck chance do we have in November when we end up with McCain elected again because these people somehow claim the majority?
I'm not ready to give up, first of all.
I didn't say I was.
I know.
What I'm saying is, if that's the situation, if our culture, if the American culture on a whole has degenerated to that point where the people who are, you know, voices of reason, and I'm not necessarily saying liberals, because there are some liberals who are out there, and there are some conservatives who look at stuff like this and go, now hold on a second.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've seen them.
Yeah.
I'm best friends with one of them, as a matter of fact, who doesn't like Obama, but thinks he's going to vote for him because he really doesn't like McCain either, and Obama's not all that bad of a liberal, he says.
Yeah, Obama's not a liberal at all, but that's for another time.
Okay, Bob, I understand this, and you understand this. You know, we're talking about the guy here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, but what chance do we have? We've got a great chance. Because, among other things, John Fox last night on All Foxed Up played some clips of just an office meeting that Obama had with his office workers, and he said, you know, most of you, he was talking to his office staff, most of you aren't even old enough to drink, but you're old enough to vote, and you're going to turn things around. And I hope he's right. Because, you know what, the evangelicals, the younger demographic is not going to vote with the fundies. The younger demographic is not going to vote with John McCain. You know, the grumpy old candidate. I mean, there's everything that.
If they're younger fundamentalists, aren't they terrified that the homosexuals are going
to... No. The younger fundamentalists stop being young fundamentalists as soon as they get out from under their mom and dad's roof and get away to college or go into their job and have to start dealing with the real world. Even the fundies acknowledge that they can't hang on to their youth. Because you get out in the real world and you have to be sane 7 days a week and you realize, wait a minute. I can't be rational for 6 days a week and just throw it away every Sunday and walk in the door and believe that the sun stands still in the sky and virgins have babies and crackers turn into meat. Can't do that. So I think there's a great chance. I saw some polling numbers and it's depressing on its face. It's depressing. The numbers right now in West Virginia, Vince, are 50-some-odd% for McCain, 38% for Obama.
Ouch.
But in 1 month's time, the Obama number has gone up 11 points. And it's going to continue to rise. So that, you know, we've got a chance. And I think the so-called redneck vote actually has a chance to be turned as well. Now, we're not going to, now make no mistake, Vince, we're not going to turn the fundies. We are not going to turn your boss and his brother. But we can and will turn people when we learn to talk to them and learn to identify with them. I don't know if you ever go to JoeBajant.com, but, you know, Joe's a great friend of the show, and he made some remarks at the Media Reform Conference this past weekend up in Minneapolis. You know, big, huge affair. Bill Moyers was the headliner, and a lot of great stuff got said. But Joe's remarks are there on his website, and, you know, he was talking about learning to walk the walk and talk the talk with the folks that are, you know, like you and me deal with, you know, the beans and cornbread crowd. And I don't mean, that's no insult on it, because, you know, what I wouldn't give for a bowl of beans and cornbread right now.
Don't worry about it.
But we can, if we want to, we can learn to have that conversation. And that's so much of what, you know, what we're doing here is about. Because, you know, not to toot my own trumpet too loudly, but I remain the only honest to God, born and bred Southern liberal talker. And I'm one of the only people who can sit down and have that conversation. And by calling in from all over the country, people are learning to have that conversation too, because we're dialoguing it with each other first. And it's real easy to poke fun at the fundies, and God knows I'm as guilty as the next guy doing it, Vince. But I'm poking fun at the ones that we cannot reach, the ones that are gone, the ones that are dead letters, dead enders, dead heads. And I'll continue to jab those people. But there is a way to reach the non-fundy Southerner, the non-fundy Midwesterner, the working class Joe and Jane. Just by...
Great.
Well, I think I am. I think I am. And it's got to, you know, it's got to be part of what you did today. You know, you weren't mean. You didn't call the guy, you know, any ugly names. You just said, the guy's not a Muslim. And you made him confess it to himself, Vince. And that's what's so important. By presenting him with the dichotomy of he can either be a Muslim or he sat in a church pew for 20 years as a Christian, you got to pick one. You can't have both. That was a beautiful, beautiful thing you did, Vince. So, you know, then I've got a little bit of optimism on this. I really do. You know, I think
you're right.
You know, I think, look, we get...
We
get California, we get Washington, we get Oregon. There's every chance in the world we get Minnesota, we get Wisconsin, likely Iowa, yes, Michigan, Illinois. The states that the Democrats usually do get, I think we will get. But the place where the worm really turns is that we may also get some stuff that we're not used to getting. And that will put the stake right through John Sidney McCain III's heart. And, you know, like I said, there's a very strong chance of that happening.
Absolutely. Well, Bob, I'm sure you got a big stack and other callers, so I'll go ahead and wrap it up and call it a night.
All right, Vince. Well, let me tell you one thing. You got a little email in while we were talking. Kate wants to remind you that there is an upside to going to lunch with the fundies. They're using their own gas and not yours for the drive to lunch. Kate's always out there looking for the silver lining and things, and she also says, and if they take enough time saying grace, your Wendy's Frosty will be melted nicely, and you can actually drink it through the straw easier.
All right, Kate. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
All right. Take care, Vince.
Hadn't looked at it that way before.
Yeah, see? That's the beauty of the horn.
All right.
All right. Talk to you later.
Yeah, you have a great evening, Bob.
You too, Vince. See ya.
Bye.
Our buddy Vince laboring away in the wilds of southeastern Georgia. And onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan, what's up, dear?
Well, a whole lot of things after that conversation.
Ain't it beautiful?
Yeah. We can get, Barack Obama can get the religious. He just won't get the fundies. And there's a difference.
Well, that, and yeah, exactly. And that's why I was sort of drawing a line at the way it was characterized in that Gallup poll data story, the extremely yeah. religious. What that is code for is the fundamentalist insane.
Yeah, the wacko.
Yeah, but I know Episcopalians who never miss a Sunday. Okay, I know Roman Catholics who never miss a Sunday. I know members of the United Churches of Christ, and Peter knows people with the Metropolitan Community Church who never miss a Sunday. And you know what? John McCain's not going to get those people, and they're extremely religious.
Yeah, and as far as the women, you know, the concern about the women who voted for Hillary, people, when they start looking at McCain's record, everybody but the people who came over as part of Operation Chaos, they will be also voting for Obama. We're not stupid.
I gotta agree first and thought, yeah, right. No. The thing that, you know, it's like that article I saw on Alternet the other day where the guy said, wrote the thing and said, you know, it's Obama in a blowout. It's 70 to 30. It's a goat killing. It's a shooting fish in a barrel thing. Just going to stomp the guts out of John McCain. And I don't want to censor anybody. None of that. But I really wish people would keep opinions like that to themselves. Because I don't want anything out there that makes Democrats and liberals and progressives and other decent human beings think that they don't have to work till the sweat just falls like rain off their brows to get Obama elected.
Get cocky. We cannot afford to get cocky.
Yeah, and just like, well, you know, it's like March Madness in college basketball. And they're like, well, did they peak too soon? We can't peak too soon.
Yeah, because... Okay, in 2000, the Democrats were saying, nobody's going to elect this idiot. Well, nobody did. They stole it.
No.
It's that simple. Turnout, 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 turnout.
Crank the turnout high enough that they can't steal it. The numbers cannot, because it's easy to steal a 2-point election. It's a hell of a lot harder to steal a 15-point one.
Yeah. I want Barack Obama to win. I'm not predicting this, but this is what I want. I want Barack Obama to win by a margin that makes this Johnson 64 election look sick.
Yeah, tame by comparison, exactly.
Exactly. And then, there's no way they can steal that.
Right. I'm with you 100%.
That's the way you win an election. That's what I'm looking for, is that humongous blowout.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you were talking about the fundings. First.
Yes.
Oh, God. I just went blank. Well, I guess I'm just going to have to let it go.
That's okay. Give it a second. It'll come back.
Oh, I do want to suggest that people, if they can, go down to the library and get hold of Barack Obama's books, the Dreams from My Father and Audacity of Hope. Read them. They are amazing books.
Cool. I need to devote some time to reading that stuff.
I got started on Dreams of My Father, and the next thing I knew, it was 4 o'clock in the morning. I literally could not put that damn thing down.
Well, I know you are a very critical reader, Susan, and when you say that, it's got to have something to recommend it.
And it's a very, very clear-eyed look at it. You know, he wasn't running for office when he wrote that book. It's a very, very clear-eyed look at himself, where he came from. And he pulls no punches at saying what he did wrong in his life and where he's effed up.
Yeah.
And that's amazingly rare in a politician. Just immensely rare.
It is indeed.
And just if you read this book, you can see this man is qualified to be president.
Indeed he is, and that's the thing that really is the base level of this. Barack Obama is qualified to be president. He's got, as Studs Terkel would have said, the right stuff. We've had 8 years of a man who was not qualified to be president. How's that worked out for us?
No.
We had 8 years of Ronald Reagan, another man who was not qualified to be president.
No.
We had 4 years of George H.W. Bush, a man who was not qualified to be president.
Exactly.
Didn't work
and
out so well.
It's not a matter of foreign policy experience or anything like that. It's a matter of emotional qualifications.
It's a matter of brains.
Yeah, brains and emotional qualifications. Because if you are not emotionally qualified to take the pressure, you fall apart.
Yeah. You know, what did they say about Bill Clinton? And that I don't want to... You know, I don't want people to get in, oh, no, not Bill Clinton. I hate Bill Clinton now. I hate him. NAFTA, yada, yada. You know, there's stuff to gripe about. But the fact of the matter was, Bill Clinton was a damn smart man who slept 4 hours a night and wanted to know every last detail about what was going on because he wanted to get it right.
Exactly.
You know, showing up is half the battle. We got seven and three quarter years now of a guy who's been in the Oval Office who isn't showing up.
Yeah, he's in his jammies asleep most of the time. Or he's on vacation.
Or he listens to what somebody else tells him. It's fine. I'm not a micromanager.
Last time I heard, President of the United States was not a job you could telecommute to.
We all still remember, although it piles up so very much, Susan, we all do still remember that the man took more vacation time in his first year of presidency than most presidents take in an entire term.
Yeah.
He was the vacation president. He was Gidget goes to the White House. So...
May I offer out one other opinion?
Absolutely. Please.
Assuming this country survives, and that is still up in the air, in some distant future, they will be erecting statues to the memory of one representative, Dennis Kucinich.
I hope so.
They will be spitting on the memory of Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah, they killed the impeachment resolution today.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't the Republicans who killed it.
No.
No.
And we know who it was.
Yes, we do.
And Nancy, you are, and you have now demonstrated to the entire world, you are complicit.
Gutless, complicit, a collaborator. She is a Vichy Democrat.
No, she's Quisling, dear.
Okay. Okay.
Let's face it, how many people know the word Vichy? A lot of people know the word Quisling.
I don't know. I think it'd be about six of one and a half dozen of the other between you and me, but she's a Quisling Vichy Democrat, okay? I mean, come on.
Well, I'm not French. I am Danish, so I understand the word Quisling. I don't really do the thing, Vichy. What can I say?
And, well, to hearken back to some of the stuff that was said last night, she's a Democrat with the Stockholm Syndrome. Now, there's another one. Yeah. She's Patty Hearst with the Symbionese Liberation Army busting through the bank doors. She just is. And so is
somebody with Stockholm Syndrome, you have to pity. I don't know if I can pity her. I can't.
how much pity did they have for Patty Hearst? I mean, you know, she was charged with the crime too, wasn't she? I don't remember the whole the whole thing, but I think that she was.
But I just really, I keep reading the war crime statutes.
Oh, that's bad for you right now. Because it's depressing.
Nancy Pelosi should read those war crime statutes. Especially the part where it says there's no statute of limitation.
Yeah, well, and that's important, and it's part of the reason that John McCain today said he was talking about what a great guy Dick Cheney was. I don't know if you saw this or not. But McCain.
Oh my God, you're kidding.
No, McCain was talking about what a great guy Cheney was, and somebody asked him, would there be a place for Dick Cheney in the McCain administration? And McCain's answer was, hell yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I just put you off supper, didn't I?
Oh, you certainly did.
Charming, ain't it? Dick
okay,
Cheney.
I'll get back at you for that.
Yeah, SecDef, the Dick Cheney. Hey, Secretary of State Cheney, how do you like that one?
Oh, my God. He'd have us in World War III in about 15 minutes. here's my way of getting back at you then before I leave. You're sitting there in your 90-degree heat. It snowed in Seattle yesterday.
Yeah, I heard that. You know what? I ain't broke up about that at all, because it ain't snowing here, and I'm still in. It's all right. It's all right. Dip me by the heel in SPF Avogadro's number and lay me out. Susan, we'll talk to you later.
Okay. Love to Agnes.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'm kind of liking the warm stuff. I was ready for it. Onward. Hi, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Yes?
Hey, it's Sandra.
Sandra, how are you?
All right. How's your health?
I'm holding up. Getting better.
Did you go and have all that surgery? Is that why you're going?
No. I just got deathly sick.
Oh, okay.
We're wondering now if maybe I might have gotten one of those rancid tomatoes.
Well, you know what? That's not even funny. That the problem with those sort of illnesses is that there's this even later on it can cause problems. So I sure hope you did.
Yeah, me too. Of course, they didn't test for any of that stuff, but I had a couple of days before the thing happened. Agnes had cut me up some fresh tomatoes and tossed them with some balsamic vinegar and some olive oil. I wolfed them down, and 2 days later, I was dog sick.
Oh, that is, yeah, gross.
Yeah, and all of the classic symptoms that went with it. I got thinking about that sort of on a lark the other last night, and just looked it up, and well, I'll be damned. But anyway, you slice it. I got pretty sick, but I'm getting better.
Oh, that's good. I can't get past the sort of foodborne illnesses that are just rampant now. I'm sure that's more of conservative governance strikes again, right?
Well, you know, I haven't had the time to go do it yet, Sandra, but go and look at the Food and Drug Administration or the Department of Agriculture inspectors. Yeah, I guess it would be the Ag Department. Find out how many inspectors have been cut over the last 7.5 years, and then let's talk about E. coli on spinach and salmonella on tomatoes and poison green beans and downer cattle. And, you know, I think you can make a connection between the two. I don't think that's crazy.
Well, you know, the thing is, I mean, the business community is so stupid, they don't realize the double-edged sword. Because now they're all panicking because their whole crop is at risk of going away. Now they want the government to step in and help. Funny that. And
yeah.
There's not enough inspectors to help them either. You know what I'm saying?
Well, right. And the floor, I mean.
It's hilarious. It's like, well, which way do you want it, people? You don't want regulations, but, ooh, when you're about to lose $500 million in crop revenue, all of a sudden, you need the government? I mean, come on.
Yeah, now we gotta write the check, you and me, us taxpayers. We gotta write the check for the Florida tomato industry because they were, you know, shorting their employees on their, wages, you know, cutting corners, trying to eke out every last little penny. And, you know, and I'm sure there's a Florida tomato lobby, Sandra. I mean, don't kid yourself.
Oh, I know, but no, I was just sort of more appalled that, well, yeah, if you had the right number of inspectors that you should have to manage and inspect our food supply, you know, A, you may not have these problems, and when you do, it can be isolated right away. You don't have to risk your whole livelihood just because you're trying to, you know, screw people and still make a buck, you know?
Yeah, and I need to smarten up a little bit. I mean, I understand E. coli. E. coli only happens when poop has been applied to food. And I know that's gross, and some people are still approaching the dinner hour, and for that I apologize. But salmonella, I don't understand an infestation of salmonella. It ain't like hoof and mouth.
No, I can't really say I understand them either. I know they're all sort of similar type of food poisoning type illnesses, and I know that they've recently revealed that if you got exposed to that, your chances of developing illnesses years down the road is a possibility, which I just shook my head. I thought, wow, that's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's really dangerous business.
Well, it's like the downer cattle that my kids ate for lunch in the school system last year. I mean, we know it's a fact. The school lunch program received, remember the, in Chico, California, the horrifying film and those were cattle on their last legs. Those were cattle that were so sick they couldn't stand up, okay?
No, and of course the Bush administration has taken this one meat company to court to stop them from testing all their cattle. You know that, right?
Right, yeah.
They're actually stopping them because it's going to harm the industry. I mean, this sort of stuff is just mind-boggling, and it's so scary because, you know, I've gone pretty much vegetarian, and, you know, I feel lots better, I have to tell you.
Well, I'm all but now, by force, you know, not by choice, but by dint of necessity.
Well, no, mine is by necessity, too, A, because I just, you know, the state of my health was just, you know, and then when we're living here with no insurance, you know, you got to take drastic measures. So that was mine. And, you know, I have to say I feel lots better, but I'm just grossed out by the state of, you know.
Yeah, and what
food now in this country. You don't know what the hell you eat.
No, you don't. And what you just said about, you know, finding out years down the road with those sick cattle in California that were literally pumped into the food stream that went to the public schools in this country under the auspices of the United States Department of Agriculture and the school lunch program. Well, see, the really terrifying thing about mad cow disease, Sandra, is it's another one of those.
No, it's years. Because I lived in Europe for so long, you know, I can't even give blood because I lived in England during that period when, you know, it was so they don't really allow you to.
Right,
give blood
because you don't because it could be decades. It could be decades before the little what are they called, prions? I think before the little prions start going hog wild inside your brain.
Well, not only that, but you look at all these people who have Alzheimer's and stuff. I'll bet a lot of that is diet related because they said, you know, in the next 20 years, 1 in 4. That's not normal. That has to be environmental. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Alzheimer's and all these sort of degenerate brain disease that are sort of taking over this country's elderly population. I'm sorry, I just, you know, I can't help but look suspiciously on diet and, you know, what we're being subjected to in this country.
And for the time being, there's no remedy in sight.
Well, there's no remedy in sight. I mean, I just think, you know, it's like the Republicans or whatever is governing this country, I think they look at the option of, you know, killing off folks is a reasonable policy plan. I hate to say it, but I'm starting to think more and more that losing a large section of the population might be part of their design.
Well, they've never, you know, they don't blanch at that kind of thing, you know, as long
exactly.
as it, you know, as long as it's not a fetus, Sandra. You know.
Well, you know what I wanted, what I was calling about was, I was like, what do you think? Okay, Obama had to let go of this guy who was the head of his vice president.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, yes.
Well, the thing about it, I mean, I'm on one hand good because he was the one that picked Kerry and, you know, I'm like, get rid of these people. You know, we're done. But my thing is that what about McCain? The man sleeps with the lobbyists. No one ever says anything to him about what he's surrounded with. I just sort of, the double standard just reeks.
Well, I know.
When I saw that in the news, I said, are you kidding me? Are they going to hassle Obama about this freak who's just helping him pick someone he's not even paid? And this man has lobbyists running his campaign from top to bottom, and it hasn't even been a substantial discussion about this yet. I keep waiting. What about you?
See, I remember, what was it, Tweety Matthews said not too long back, well, you know, we've kind of given John McCain a pass, but once the nominees are all sorted out, we'll be as tough on him as we are on Obama. Well, I'm still waiting.
That's what Gwen Ifill said, too. I'm like, well, I'm still waiting. And, you know, I'm sick of the sort of, you know, Obama saying he wants to do, you know, X, Y, and Z as far as trying to reduce the influence of lobbyist money, which is admirable. But, oh, all of a sudden the media is going to hold him within an inch of his life to that promise. Notice that? But McCain, you know, walks around doing whatever, just surrounded, sleeping and doing whatever with these lobbyists, and it hasn't even been touched yet. And
well, see, and the thing that goes with that, though, Sandra, is the guy that got busted, you know, the advisor, if you will. Well, I can't remember his name. What was it, Johnson or something?
You mean the
Obama
VP selection people?
Right. This guy gets hammered because he got a mortgage because he was pals with Countrywide.
Yeah, Countrywide, and he was, involved with Fannie Mae on some level.
Right. Okay, so that, you know, that looks a little dodgy, and, yeah, I'm okay with sending him out the door. All right. However, the McCains own 8 mansions. All right? It's not like they own a little, you know, a little bungalow in a working-class neighborhood. They own 8 mansions. And unless Cindy just wrote a check for cash for every last one of them, they've gotten a little bit of help here and there on that. And who's to say that, you know, I don't know how long they've owned them. I haven't done the research. I don't know how long they've owned them, Sandra. And so, consequently, how do I know that Charles Keating didn't put some of that savings and loan funny money into some of the 8 McCain mansions?
Oh, no, it's just, no, it's endless, the double standard. And, you know, I'm still reeling and just so angry I can barely talk about it. This man getting $58,000 a year from the VA, from the VA as totally disabled. How the hell is he running for president?
Yeah, and then he bitches about pork.
And he bitches about the GI Bill for the current veteran.
Well, there's that too now, isn't there?
What kind of kicking of the ladder type of bullshit is this? You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I absolutely do.
It's like kick the ladder from under, but in the meanwhile, your ass is getting $58,000 checks cut a year because you're totally disabled.
Well, but it's so much deeper than that, Sandra. You know, his first wife had that horrible, debilitating car wreck while he was in the POW camp, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, now, he was married to her at the time, and back then, military medical coverage was decent, especially, you know, for a lifer and an officer and all of that stuff. She's the wife of an officer.
Yeah.
She was covered. And yet Ross Perot wrote the check for her medical bills.
Not only that, but Ross Perot had a choice quote to say about McCain, which was, like, pretty understated, but it just said a lot. He basically said, you know, the guy is, you know, scum for what
he's a sleaze merchant. Yeah.
That,
yeah.
But that's what he meant. It was hilarious. I'm like, well, good on you, old Ross Perot, you know.
But Ross wrote the check.
Yeah, I know, and it's all on the DL, and you know, real. Yeah, I'm just like, well, okay, this guy is, his character is despicable, McCain.
I mean, I don't know if you'd call it character. Is it like -2 is the same as +2, only it's negative? I mean, there's a complete absence of character on the part of John McCain.
No, but his base, which is the for-profit media, is not even letting anyone get a look-see at how despicable it is. I mean, all this information, of course, I'm getting from, well, the only media I sort of pay attention to, which is Citizen, Alternative, you know what I'm saying, my own research. And I'm just appalled by what I'm finding out about this cretin. He's craven. And I heard your top caller talk about, you know, his boss, you know, it's just going to vote for him without giving it a thought, you know, because he can't deal with the Negro. And I'm like, these people are so beyond stupid, and they can't get the information, you know.
And that's the sort of problem I think that we face, Sandra, is that I've been pouring a ton of thought into this. Of course, what a ton of thought from me amounts to that is open to debate. But I've been thinking about it and thinking about it and thinking about it. You know, scratching my head like the Scarecrow in the Wizard of Oz. You know, just if I only had a brain. And these folks, and I don't mean necessarily Southern folks, because it happens in it happens up east, it happens out west, it happens in the Midwest, it happens in, it's an American phenomenon and not a regional one, and that is these American people who are busting their asses, Sandra. They're working two jobs, they're working three jobs, and they come home and they don't sit down and scan the alternative media trying to find out, you know, where the BS separates from the facts. And it doesn't automatically rise like, you know, scum to the top of the pond either, where you just skim it and there it is. And so they come home and, you know, maybe they get it from CNN, or they get their information from Fox, or they get their information from God knows, you know, their local their local news coverage. And it's all crap.
No, I mean, you know.
But I can't goon on that guy. I can't goon on that woman, because they're working their asses off just trying to keep their heads above water.
Oh, no, no. I definitely appreciate what you're saying about that. But on the other hand, your first caller again made a good point. He's talking to dude. He said, dude calling him about Reverend Wright. He's like, hello. Now, that's right there available for everyone to see. The man is a Muslim and just spent 20 years in some black nationalist type church, like they say. Yeah, you know, what does that make him? And if you know, you don't have to be digging too deep to realize that there's a contradiction there, right?
Right. But that's the disconnect of a fundy, okay?
Okay, that's just sort of, because I was like, yeah, you know, that made a lot of sense what he said. And I'm like, yeah.
You know, Barack Obama was not sitting in the back pew of some lily-white Southern Baptist church, listening dutifully to the insane ravings of a cult minister, because I consider the Southern Baptist Church a cult at this point. And as a result of you know, basically the Trinity United Church of Christ, you know, talking here, you know, that's a black church. And there's a religious racism involved in this, because they couldn't do this to Obama had he been sitting in the first anointed holiness tabernacle apostolic assembly of God with a bunch of white people with the hair hazes.
Well, no, and me, I don't even want to argue on that, because it's so beyond insulting to your just sort of, you know, base church goer anyway. Because, you know, it's black people for this sort of segregated nightmare we worship in this country. So when you have a bunch of black people worshiping together, you know, they are going to take the opportunity to do what? Talk about whitey. Hey, that's how it goes.
Guess what? Down in the fellowship hall of the Southern Baptist Church, they're talking about the black problem, too.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just saying, it's like, you know, for them to portray it as if, oh, gee, we didn't know. Come on, you know?
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. And it's, you know, it's just absurd to think that, I mean, even gullible white people, no one's believing that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
No?
God. And it's a mountain to climb. It is.
But the media is right in the middle of this sort of problem that we have trying to get to the correct answers of things. I mean, they're an impedance. They are not helpful.
Before we run off down the garden path and get it under get it into our heads that it's strictly this issue, I got a sound bite here, if you don't mind me sharing it with you while I got you on the line, because I know you'll just enjoy the hell out of it. Barack Obama and Mark Warner of Bristol, Virginia, you know, that's NASCAR territory, right?
Mark Warner, he's right now, is he?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Andrea Mitchell on MSNBC. Yeah, I can
tell. Married to that evil bastard Alan Greenspan?
I do believe.
Shut up. Okay.
Well, she was explaining to the rest of the nation what meant for Barack Obama to go into southwestern Virginia. Okay. I mean, you want to hear some snottiness, Sandra? I mean, this is snotty with a capital snot. Okay. Now, just check this out. It'll only take a second. Here we go.
Interesting images today. Barack Obama, Mark Warner, mm-hmm. in southwest Virginia. This is real redneck sort of bordering Appalachia country. This is not the Northern Virginia sort of high-tech corridor. And these are voters that he would not do. This is the beginning of a pivot.
How do you like that, Sandra?
Wow. The elitist people are just that big to just, you know what? I can't even get past the tone. Is she for real?
Yes, this was offered.
Did you say redneck?
Yeah, there's the quote. This is real redneck, sort of bordering on apple country.
Oh,
hell, Sandra, I didn't know there was a demarcation. I didn't know that. I didn't.
Like the meeting of the oceans, huh?
Appalachian is apparently lower than redneck.
Right. I'm saying her tone and the whole sort of, as if she was, you know, entering some sort of other world. She was talking.
And it is to her. I mean, Jesus, there's no...
He was trying to say it's the same for Obama.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
Right, yeah, but because there's no... There's not a Nordstrom's in Bristol.
Or some arugula.
Yes, arugula. baby radicchio greens.
Oh, shut the hell up. That is... I mean, no, because she is so disgusting with her Ayn Rand bastard husband who destroyed this country. Listen... How can she be a media parry to that bastard? You understand what I mean?
Oh, yeah, in the air.
No, like, you know, Maria Shriver, one thing I can say about her, at least her ass ain't on NBC. She said, oh, it may be a bit of a conflict. I said, you think? You know, her marriage to Arnold and all. But this girl, she continues to be talking as if her opinions matter. That was disgusting, Bob. God damn.
Yeah, I mean, what kind of ism is that? It's certainly elite ism.
Oh no, it's beyond that, and it's awful. The level of sort of ignorance in what she's saying too was just appalling. That's what I was tripping.
Oh
on.
Yeah, and well, and yeah, the snideness that statement. You know, this is.
This isn't the Northern Corridor high tech. No, it's. It's redneck, it's absolute, you know what I mean? Yeah, that's classic. You gotta keep that age.
Yeah, and people can hear it for themselves, see her saying it. You know, I haven't dummied up the audio or anything. It's over at MediaMattersForAmerica.org. And I love that, you know, Barack Obama has no business there. What is it? Like they've got a black man don't let the sun set on you here sign in Bristol?
No, that just sort of goes into their, oh, he's, you know.
What, God, I want to tear my hair out. And these are voters not logically be, you know, gravitating to. Well, which voters would those be, Andrea?
Oh, that's not one, or whatever the hell that McCain was saying. Remember that speech that he gave?
Oh, yeah.
Repeating, that's not the change you need, or... I don't know what he was talking
about. The icky Halloween sort of green backdrop behind him that should have had the words, you know, I'm...
Yeah, it was just some horrible... All of that was just awful. But see, my take on that, I think that is making these white people literally crazy. I think it's going to make them insane. I do. I think they're coming on because they don't know how to wrap their head around comments like that woman. What does she sound like? Please. And Cokie Roberts is another one that just should be taken out and shot. You know what I mean?
I'll buy the bullets.
And I don't really care. These people are just, wow. That, yeah.
That stings,
you know,
doesn't it?
I'm sick of these media people.
Yeah.
Media whore number one, him, Tim Russert. I'm sick of him. I'm sick of her, the U-boat. Mossad agent.
Yeah, Wolf Blitzer, yeah, Matthews, right.
All of them.
And all of the Clinton fans would just as soon spit on Keith Olbermann as look at him.
Well, yeah. Well, see, I haven't really been watching him. Has he been pounding away at Clinton?
No, he lit into her a couple of times, and it was a little over the top, frankly.
Because the one that I saw that I thought, wow, calm down, was when she made the Robert Kennedy assassination thing. He did some sort of tirade that I thought, Lordy.
Yeah, and that was the one that really pushed the Hillary supporters to the brink.
Okay.
Because he was screaming at Hillary the way he usually screams at Bush.
Yeah, and so I understand it might have been offensive what she said, but really, it don't approach, you know, what these other folks have been doing. But yeah, You know, and you always have to look with these dudes. I wonder if there's a little bit of misogyny involved, but who knows?
Exactly. So I don't know what you call it beyond elitism when they but this is the uphill fight that Barack Obama has.
But she just sounded totally out of sync and really not knowing what the hell she's talking about.
You know, I just hope she chokes to death on her next hummingbird tongue canape or something.
Exactly. You know what I mean? And the thing about these people, you know, they just live for so long. I mean, she's been around forever. It's like retire.
Oh, look, you know, let's go ahead and get catty. I mean, you look at her on the video, and you know the woman's had so many facelifts that every time she raises her eyebrows, her pantyhose come up. I mean, she's just. Does she go to sleep at night with a little bit of the native soil from her home country in her coffin or something?
You know what? Yeah, exactly. No, both of them. That is like, see, a reason why when you said Andrea Mitchell, I just think about her and her husband. They're some sort of couple from hell. And I resent that she's a part of the media. I can't get past it because I think that it's improper for her.
Because there's some
Thomas Friedman, all these sort of wankers who are just rich beyond pale to be participating, you know, in our democracy like this. Basically, that's where I'm coming from. They don't need to be involved.
No, they don't. And if there were any sort of ethics or any sort of introspection at all in the media, they wouldn't be.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's just all of it is just really gruesome. But listen, the only other thing I want to say, and I'll let you go, is of course the House can't get this goddamn unemployment extension passed. It's stalled.
I know.
Stalled. I'm just like, what more do you need to see? Goddamn. You know,
yeah.
I can't believe it.
Well, but bear in mind, if you ask Nancy Pelosi about it, she'll say, well, see, that's why we need more Democratic members of the House in November. Then we'll get something done.
No, see, she's talking to the dumb Americans who ain't never taken a goddamn civics course. I'm like, I am so over this, we need this amount of vote. No, bitch, just need to not bring this bill to the floor or whatever you need to do. There's so many ways of doing it. I'm sick.
Well, start busting some Republicans, you know, because
let them bastards filibuster for a minute. Oh, they just threaten and they fold like a bunch of cards. I'm like, this isn't the Republicans had your ass on the back burner nonstop when they were in power. Now they can do any procedure they want, and the Democrats just fall apart.
I know.
You know.
Yeah, and when I think about the effort that went into getting them that majority in 2006 and how hard so many liberals and progressives and Democrats and decent people worked to create that majority, and then just to see them slap us in the face, it's galling, Sandra. It's mighty damn galling.
No, and I'm sick. If I see that queer McConnell up there one more time, and I say queer because that's what the hell he is with his beard, his wife.
Yeah.
I'm sick of him. I'm sick of his face. And the good news about him, he's down 5 points in Kentucky or wherever the hell he's from.
Oh, that's a beautiful. And I guess, the Jim Inhofe, Inhofe in Oklahoma is actually having to battle for his political life.
Well, no, you know what? About damn time. He's crazy.
Oh, he's nuts!
He's not even saying.
Here, I tell you what. I know you got to go, but I got to give you one last giggle.
Okay.
Before you do, this is a political commercial that Inhofe is running. Okay. This is a commercial about, you know, what a statesman he is, and you know how he really comprehends world geopolitical problems. Okay, that we'll play a little game and see if see if you can catch the problem with the ad.
Ethiopia, Zambia, Iraq, 29 intense trips in 12 years to the front, to the saddest parts of Africa, to quietly get to know the leaders, talking, praying, bonds that might bring peace, save a life, bring hope. Jim Inhofe did that?
I'm Jim Inhofe, and I approve this message.
You heard it. He approved it.
Wait, well, Iraq?
Ethiopia, Zambia, Iraq. To the saddest parts of Africa.
Is Iraq in Africa now?
It is now, at least in the minds of Republican Oklahoma voters.
Oh, God. You know what? He is a DA. He's straight up dumbass.
Yeah.
Remember when Boxer told him to shut the hell up?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you'd have to bring this guy in out of the rain to keep him from drowning, okay? That's how stupid he is.
He is like a turkey. No. Oh, listen. I can't even start because he's the one showing his picture saying, there's no homosexuals ever been in my family. I thought my head was going to explode.
Oh, this is the guy who called the EPA and the EPA Nazis. He's a real winner, and now he... Look, you want to see what homeschooling gets you? Ethiopia, Zambia, Iraq, Africa.
Oh, right!
Faith-based education, there you go.
That's right. Oh, shit. Well, listen. Oh, sorry.
That's
all
right.
I know I've been cussing a lot on this phone call. I got to get a grip.
Sometimes it's in you and it's in the situation and it's mighty hard to get around. Thank God for the internet, huh, Sandra?
Right. Have a good one.
All right. You take care.
Bye.
Bye now. That's one for the ages. And we're going straight back to the phones in a minute. But, you know, I can't not play this again. Let this one sink in for a second.
Ethiopia. Zambia. Iraq. 29 intense trips in 12 years. To the front, to the saddest parts of Africa.
There you go. Ethiopia, Zambia, Iraq. 29 intense trips in 12 years to the front, to the saddest parts of Africa. To quietly get to know the leaders and pray with them. Well, Jim, in hope we're praying somebody sends you a damn map. I don't know. Maybe he's kin to that girl from South Carolina that was competing in the Teenage Miss America thing that wanted to buy maps for South Africa. Jesus Christ. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
What's going on?
This is Andrew from up there in New York. I'm up there 2 miles from FDR's house.
Yeah, that's right. I recognized you right away. Getting along, I reckon.
All right. You feeling better? You sound better.
Yeah, I think I am. I'm improving. I'm not out of the woods yet, but it took me 45 years to get my guts this way, so it'll probably take a couple of weeks to get better.
All right, very good. I'm going to talk about Pelosi. That was an awesome call with you and Sandra, and, you know, that was one for the ages. But Pelosi and impeachment. Now, I know everybody's talking about impeachment. You know, there's not enough time, blah, blah, blah. And we had this discussion many a time before. But in order for Pelosi to receive any kind of redemption from the American people, she's going to have to impeach him. She has to. I mean, whatever programs that Bush was running that they were, you know, they were briefed on, at that time, they didn't have control of the House. They didn't have control of the Senate. Everything was controlled by the Republicans. So even if they knew about it and they wanted to do something about it, they couldn't do anything about it. They didn't have control. It's a non-issue. I don't see why they can't go ahead and impeach. The American people will understand that the Republicans controlled the House, the Senate, and the executive branch. And they had no... They had no power to do anything about it at the time.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct.
So even if the Bush administration comes out and says, hey, they knew about it too, well, they said, well, we really couldn't do nothing about it because we had no power. So I don't see where, if Pelosi's thinking that way, that if they go ahead and impeach, that they're going to be exposed. Really, when you look at it, they have no culpability because they had no power. They were handcuffed. And what? Bush only let them in on it because they knew if they tried to impeach him, then they would say, well, then we could say that, they knew about it too. But in essence, they had no ability to have any way of combating that issue and voicing their concerns about it. I mean, Sensenbrenner was turning the lights off in the House.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember when John Conyers had to hold a hearing in a broom closet in the basement.
Yeah.
So I get all that. I get all that.
I don't see why they're afraid to go ahead and have hearings, which is what they
should do. But, Andrew, they are afraid, whether we understand why or not. There's no getting around the fact that they're scared. And I don't want to hear about, I'm not aiming at this at you. I'm aiming this at them. I don't want to hear about political pragmatism.
Because, I don't want to hear about that either.
Because when you take an oath to the Constitution, there's no, the word pragmatism does not exist.
No, it doesn't.
And frankly, I'll go ahead and say this. I don't know if anybody else would. I would sacrifice a Democratic majority in the House of Representatives to see them do the right thing. Okay, because that's mighty, mighty strong language, I think, as far as they're concerned, because that's their thing. Mark Levine said this to me last night in the first hour of my program. He said, "Look, the Republicans lost members in 1998 over the Bill Clinton impeachment." I said, "But they didn't lose their majority."
No, they didn't. They didn't.
But they did lose members, and I understand that fear. But you know what? Working America makes hard choices. Working Americans make tough choices. We make choices we don't want to make every day of our lives. And they're choices that are based on ethics. They're choices that are based on morals. They're choices that are based on necessity, Andrew.
Exactly.
And these lily-livered, spineless people can't do it once? Just once?
Yeah, they can't stand on their hind legs and say, "Look, that's it. We had enough. I mean, if we get a little dirt on us or whatever, blah, 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 so be it." But they have to uphold their oath to the United States Constitution, the American... The foul must be put on trial. There must be hearings.
There must be accountability.
Yes, that's what we need.
Because you know what? I don't want. I can be nonpartisan enough, Andrew, to say that I don't want any president, Democrat or Republican, to ever, ever, ever do the things that George W. Bush has done in the last 7.5 years.
Exactly, and that's the point. It's not about Republican or Democrat. It's about defacing and devaluing and stomping on the U.S. Constitution, whether it's a Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, or Green, whatever, whoever is in the Oval Office. If they were doing this, I don't care what is behind their name. I don't care what letter is behind their name. They must be held accountable for the actions that they have committed and the crimes they have done. And the stomping on the civil liberties of Americans, the starting of illegal wars, they must be held accountable for their actions. And that's all we're asking for. That's all what sane people that know what's going on, because I know the media has been out to lunch and they're in the back pockets of the corporations and the Bush administration.
Sure.
That's all we're asking for. We're just asking for, hey, use the procedures that are within the Constitution of the United States of America. That's all we're asking for.
And it would, and apparently it's a question too far. And I guess it's my ideal, what's left of my idealism showing through, Andrew, but I don't understand why that is.
It boggles my mind. I talk to people every day.
I got to obey the law.
They know what's going on. They know that this is a criminal, that we have criminals occupying the White House.
Look, I got a buddy, Andrew, and I'm not going to say a name. I don't want anybody getting embarrassed or anything. But I got a buddy who, once upon a time, was a private investigator. And in the course of his private investigations, he was retained in a really high-profile, nasty divorce. And at the behest of his client, he tapped the phone line of the other spouse and got caught and went to federal prison for it. Now, he was called to accountability with regard to a violation of the law.
Mm-hmm.
How many millions of Americans has George Bush done the same thing that my friend went to prison for?
Millions.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, why is George Bush not accountable for that? Why does Nancy Pelosi think that George Bush is not accountable for that? Why does Steny Hoyer think that George Bush is not accountable for that?
Hey, I have a lot of things running through my head as to answer that very question. And Pelosi is really pissing me off. I mean, thoroughly pissing me off, because, like we said when I began this discussion, they had no power back then when they were briefing them on all these illegal programs that were going on.
Couldn't do a blessed thing about it.
2006. They couldn't do nothing about it, even if they wanted to do something about it. That's what they were saying before all the time.
But that didn't stop Dennis Kucinich and a whole bunch of other liberals and progressives in the House from voting against the Iraq War resolution. They got it right.
That's true too. That's true. But in the grand scheme of things, they couldn't really call them on it. So I don't see why they would be afraid to say, if the Bush administration comes up and say, well, they knew about it too. Why didn't they do nothing to stop us? You know, why didn't they, it looks like they were agreeing with what we were doing. But they couldn't do nothing about it anyway.
Well, let me take it a little bit further, please, Andrew. The oath was hardly out of her mouth when she was sworn in as Speaker of the House when Nancy Pelosi said that impeachment was off the table. Now, it goes without saying that when you say that a constitutional principle is off the table, you're sort of dissing the Constitution in a big way. However, when she did that, she did so with the explanation that the Democrats had an ambitious agenda of things that the American people needed and wanted done, and that impeachment would only serve as a distraction to really going about the business of the people. You remember that too?
Yeah, I remember it. Yes.
But what have they done? I mean, we got an almost insulting rise in the We got an insulting rise in the minimum wage. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. That's all we got. Since we got in, since they had this slim majority in the House, that's it. But what she said about, you know, this agenda and everything about, you know, with, well, impeachment would take away from our agenda, blah, 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 gaining seats, blah, 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 this and that. It's like, that doesn't compute, because if you impeach this guy, okay, you impeach these people for the crimes that they have committed and the treasonous acts they committed, that can only bolster everything, because the media would have to report on it. The media would have to. They would have to. If you held hearings, it would not only be on C-SPAN. They would have no choice but to report on it. And the American people would know then, in mass, not just us, not just the people that have their eyes open and been watching these thugs for the last 7+ years. Everybody would know about it. And McCain's on board with Bush. And if McCain's on board with Bush, McCain stands for everything that the American people would see when the media was forced to report the truth. That would be shown in our U.S. Capitol, in the House, in the Senate. It's a slam dunk.
Yeah, it is. And
we would win by what you said, 15 percentage points? How about 20, 30?
Yeah, and this is another thing that Mark brought up last night. He said, you know, that because he's had it said to him, you know, he's in Washington, these people talk to him. You know, well, you know, we don't have the votes. We can't do it. The American people aren't hollering for it. The American people don't want it, so we can't do it. And my only response was, well, God knows they didn't try to get the American people to want it. They didn't sit there and bust their ass to put the information out there. No. They've relied. Well, okay, I got to be careful, because I'm going to go off down the garden path and get all pissed off. But they have let, you know, they have let the so-called liberal blogosphere carry the water. They've let me and Guy James and Mark Levine and Peter Godbold and John Fox carry the water. They've let Randy Rhodes and Mike Malloy carry the water.
Yeah.
But you know what? Do they support the people doing the work? Hell no, they're getting the milk for free. Why in the world would they want to pay to feed the cow?
I know, it's ridiculous. I mean, the people in the liberal blogosphere are busting their humps every day, 24/7. Radio hosts, journalists that are still left there trying to get the news out on liberal blogs, websites, Raw Story, Common Dream, Alternet, busting their humps every day trying to get the truth out. And people are waking up gradually. It's been a seven-year process that they're gradually waking up to all the criminality that's going on. People just, American citizens are just walking around talking to people saying, like, oh, man, I don't know why this country's so jacked right now. Why is it so messed up? And it's, you know, it's just hand to mouth. We're just going around trying to feed each other the news or whatever. When, in reality, when if the mainstream media was doing a sticking job, and they went out and reported the news and the truth, then it would be a slam dunk. This joker would be impeached in 2 weeks.
Yeah, this is not rocket science. This is not, frankly, this is not nearly as complex or complicated as trying to make an impeachment out of a sex act. Okay, this is outright murder. This is outright perjury. This is outright unconstitutional conduct. Clear violations of the law that simple facts will prove to the satisfaction of whatever standard of proof is called for.
Yeah, exactly. And it'll prove it to a conservative, a liberal, or whatever. It don't matter. You see the evidence, and if the evidence is presented clearly and concisely and to the point, people will say, man, that's why I can't afford to put gas in my car. Man, that's why I haven't had a hamburger in 2 weeks. Man, that's why I can't afford to pay my mortgage.
Yeah. And
that's why I haven't.
But meanwhile, what's MSNBC got putting up for programming? Andrea Mitchell blathering away about how shocked she is that Barack Obama is going down to southwestern Virginia to talk to the rednecks who are almost Appalachian. I mean, I heard that thing before I played it for Sandra, Andrew.
I heard it, and I was just like, I was going to leave that alone because then I'll start cussing and discussing. I'd probably be doing more cussing than discussing. But
these people that put these programs on the air go home at the end of the day and somebody says, hey, Buster, what do you do for a little? Oh, I'm a journalist. The hell you are!
Yeah, exactly. But the only way that we can make the journalists be journalists, okay, the only way we can get the fourth estate to come back, because, you know, I know they're worried about their jobs. I know if they start reporting the truth, they might lose their jobs. We've seen what happened to Dan Rather. We've seen what happened to Phil Donahue. But if the U.S. House starts holding hearings, hey, all the onus is off the media. They got to report that.
Yeah, they can't hide from it.
Can't hide from that.
And maybe that's the thing. I'm going to be a little bit crass here, Andrew. Just a little bit crass. Maybe if Dennis Kucinich had included a 36th count in his bill of impeachment that said, and by the way, George Bush got a blowjob. The for-profit media would have been on it like a duck on a June bug.
Or they found one of Ann Coulter's stained black dresses in the Oval Office.
Yeah, or maybe a pair of Jeff Gannon's tidy whiteys.
Yeah, that too. Who knows? Scott McClellan may reveal that next week, in a couple of weeks.
Oh God. Yeah, I'm going to be watching that. I'm going to be watching that on the that's a week from Friday. That's Friday the 20th of June.
Yeah.
I'm going to be watching that.
Pop some popcorn for that one.
I'm bringing out the Jiffy Pop. You know, I'm getting the good stuff.
Oh, the classic, yes. But I'm going to let you go, Bob.
All right, you doing okay otherwise, Andrew?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. I'm doing okay.
All right, good deal, man. Awful good to hear from you. I always love hearing from you.
All right, likewise.
You take care now.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye now. 2 miles from the home of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, our good buddy Andrew. That would be cool to be that close to Hyde Park. Because it is a shrine. Hey, welcome to the program. Who have I got?
This is George from Denver.
Hey, George, how are you?
Good, how you doing?
It's been a long time.
It's been a while, huh?
It has indeed.
Well, you know, I've been searching for the truth.
And
I spent just tons of hours researching everything. And everything kept taking me back to JFK getting murdered. And I don't know if I would be off subject talking about that.
No, go right ahead. Good. That's a seminal point in the history of this country. I think everything changes at that point.
And it did. And what I found out through my research is that, you know who Madeline Brown is?
Yes.
Well, for those who don't know, she was the mistress of LBJ for 22 years. And they had a son together who became a lawyer. And when LBJ died, he decided, hey, my dad was president. I want some of that money. And so he put in a claim for $10 million. And he was kidnapped, taken to an insane asylum, and held until after that trial date. And then he was released. And then a while after that, he got cancer and died. And Lady Bird went in, had her friends in the military go in and change his record to be a dishonorable discharge out of the military. And it made Madeline Brown so mad that she sat in her backyard for 2 hours, and you can see the video on YouTube. But she sat in her backyard, and she told everything she knew about everything. But one of the main things she said the night before Kennedy got it, LBJ, Nixon, George H. Bush, and Generals Galore went to a meeting in Dallas. And when they came out of the meeting, LBJ walked up to her and put his hands on her shoulders and said, "Them son of a bitch Kennedys won't screw with me after tomorrow." And then later on, after he was done being president, they met at a hotel, and she told him, "Did you have something to do with killing Kennedy?" And he went into a rage, and he threw things around, and he was cussing and breaking things, and she said, and then he settled down, and he said, "No," he said, I didn't have anything to do with it, but Big Oil and the CIA did. So there he is admitting. Now, the CIA, even though George H. Bush doesn't remember where he was, there's a picture of him if you Google the school book depository.
Oh, yeah, in Dallas.
Yeah, if you Google George H. Bush in the school book depository, there he is standing right there with the other detectives. Okay, and he was, even though he says he wasn't in the CIA, he was the head of the CIA for Texas, and he was running that hit. He was one of the main guys. He ran that hit on Kennedy. And, there's another picture that people need to see, and remember the picture of LBJ in the airplane with his hand up taking the oath of office with
Paul Jackson? Oh yeah.
Everybody's seen that, right?
Sure. Well, I assume.
If you Google the most revealing wink of the 20th century, you'll see that picture and another picture. The other picture is 15 seconds later. And that's when poor Jacqueline guts all over. She's starting to walk away. Lady Bird's walking away. And in the other picture, everybody behind him is doom and gloom. So now everybody's starting to walk away. LBJ turns to his right to Albert Thomas, a congressman. And Albert Thomas gives him a wink and a smile. Now, Albert Thomas got Brown and Root the contract to build the Johnson Space Center, which would be a couple hundred billion dollars of our money today.
Right, and JFK was JFK made Brown and Root because they started out building dams and roads and things like that, and it was the patronage of JFK, LBJ. I'm sorry, it was LBJ who provided the political patronage to get them the contracts that got them their very beginning.
Well, so Albert Thomas got Brown and Root that contract a couple hundred billion dollars, and Brown and Root is Halliburton.
Now it is, yeah.
Yeah, so it started back then. Then, you know, Johnson.
Well, they earned their first ugly nickname in Vietnam. The soldiers in Vietnam referred to them as Kellogg, Burn, and Loot. And yeah. and it was KBR, it was their people who built the so-called tiger cages that we used for housing prisoners in Vietnam. The history of that organization goes back a hell of a lot further than the Bush administration, and shamefully so.
And you know, when Johnson became a senator, do you remember there was a big controversy over his being elected senator?
I don't know so much about that.
All the polls showed that he was going to lose in double-digit numbers. And then at the very end, it's called ballot box 13. And he was able to get enough votes, I think it was like 80,000 or I don't know what it was, enough to win. He won by 50 votes or something. And that's how, and after he was president, a reporter was talking to him. And he asked him about, he said, well, now, there's controversy about you rigging that election, or something like that. And he said, Johnson got up and he ran into his closet, big old walk-in closet, and he said he could hear stuff banging around and falling. And he said, and then Johnson could finally come walking out of there with a picture. And he handed the guy a picture, and it was Johnson with all his cronies standing around an old car with ballot box 13 on the hood.
I'll be darned.
Stole the election. And they've been stealing elections ever since. And I'll tell you what, Johnson was in on that hit on Kennedy, and what Albert Thomas was doing was he was saying we successfully took over the United States of America. It was a coup d'etat. We lost our country then. And they have been busy infiltrating and looting JFK had just signed a bill saying 1,000 troops out by the end of the month, and all of them out by 64. And look what ended up happening, you know, with Johnson.
Sure.
And the Gulf of Tonkin. And all the criminality that has gone on from then till now. And then you get to 9/11, and, you know, you had that music from Ani DeFranco.
Yes, yes.
You were the one that played it. That was the first place I ever heard that. And I love that. That was so good. But anyway, did a lot of investigation into 9/11. And 9/11's an inside job. There's no way around it. The only way those two big towers could have fallen the way they fell is if the 98 floors below that impact hole was made of fine glass. That's how fast it went down. There was absolutely no resistance from all that structural steel. That building was overbuilt. You know.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, George. And I'm not. And frankly, I put 9/11 in the same box that I put the Kennedy assassination in. A terribly amateurish attempt on the part of the federal government to provide some level of plausible deniability to those who needed it worst. I don't know what happened on September 11th. I am more than comfortable saying that the Bush administration was at least grossly negligently complicit what are the two acronyms, the My Hoppers and the Lie Hoppers, the Made It Happens and the Let It Happens. I come down as a Let It Happen.
Right.
Because there was, you know, there is so much credible evidence that you don't need to work real hard to prove that proves the Let It Happen, the scenario. The Hart Rudman report that was dropped on the desk of George W. Bush in January of 2001, immediately upon taking office, that said that there will be a major airline-related disaster in this country resulting from terrorism. Not maybe, but will be. And it will be more likely sooner than later. There's that. There's the evidence that comes from the guy who was the first treasurer under Bush. There's the Richard Clark stuff. There's the business about, well, no one could imagine that the planes would be used as missiles when, in fact, George Bush's first trip to the G8 summit was in, what, Genoa, Italy? And he had to stay offshore on a ship because they had direct evidence of threats of so-called terrorists using planes as missiles to try to attack the conference. there's the presidential daily briefing of August the 6th. You can make a really strong case that these people knew it was going to happen, that it fit perfectly within the parameters of the Project for a New American Century's call for another Pearl Harbor. You've got Paul Wolfowitz appearing and giving the commencement address in June of 2001 to the graduating class at the United States Military Academy at West Point, New York, telling them, I can't tell you, and this is a quote, George, I can't tell you what's coming, but I can just tell you to be ready to be surprised. This is to a graduating class of young military officers. The transcript's out there for anybody who wants to find it. So I come down as a lie hopper. Simply because I can't satisfy myself to the degree that I need to be satisfied personally that it was actually physically brought down as an inside job. But that's just me, and I understand. You know, and I understand those who think otherwise.
You know, if you get to looking at the evidence, it won't take you very long to go from lie hop to my hop, or however that goes. And you know, Mike Malloy, he was always saying that. If you put everything under the best possible light for the Bush crime family, they let it happen.
Right.
You know, under all the best circumstances.
Yeah, under the most charitable of conditions, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so my training, while I don't practice or anything, I learned something a long time ago in school, and that was you make your strongest arguments are never bold. Let's see if I can say this right. Weak arguments always make strong arguments weaker. Strong arguments never make weak arguments stronger. Okay? So, you know, when I talk about, and I frankly try to avoid talking about 9/11, George, because so many people get so impassioned about this, and they get mad. They tend to get mad at whichever side you're not on. The way I look at it is there is enough evidence to damn these people for letting it happen, an abundance of evidence to damn these people for letting it happen, evidence that could be adduced in front of a jury of 12 Americans tried and true who weren't smart enough to figure out how to get out of jury duty. And at the end of the day, that's who you got to prove it to. And with that in mind, I would far prefer to see these bastards hung on that petard than to try it, because if you march into court with the really, really complicated physics and the engineering and stuff, and I've seen it, I've read it, I've looked at it, some of it's compelling, some of it less so. But you can't, you could never get 12 people on a jury to buy it, frankly.
That was one of the reasons I called you tonight, was to let you know that just in the last year, because I talked to people every single day, lots of people, and the tide has turned. People are, whenever I ask them about 9/11, they go, oh, we've heard a lot about that. I mean, they're not like before, they used to like reject you. Not anymore. No, everybody's kind of waking up to what really happened, and I'm just letting you know it's changing out there.
Well, I don't doubt it, and I think it sounds like that to me too. The question for me is, and I put this in the same category as impeachment. If ever anyone is going to go after these filthy, murderous, bloody-handed SOBs, these motherless, soulless monsters for what they have done to this country, it must be done in such a way that we can prove it in front of a trier of fact.
But see, when they took over, when Johnson and his criminals took over this country, they've owned it for 50 years now.
Yeah.
And the Justice Department is theirs. It's not ours. It's theirs. Now, they pretend, they throw us a little bone every now and then to make us think that it's still there, but it's not there. It's theirs. It's not ours.
No. And the fact is, this all didn't happen on George Bush's watch. I mean, if you go back as far as the federal sentencing guidelines that came down under Ronald Reagan, we put federal district judges on district court benches and give them a lifetime appointment, and they serve on good behavior. You know, as long as they don't breach their own ethics, they stay on the bench, and they were given constitutionally the leeway to make sentencing decisions. Well, Congress, at the behest of the Republicans in the 80s, started taking away the rights of judges to make the informed decisions on whether or not a kid who gets, you know, busted with a joint in his pocket goes up for as long as a rapist does. But with the federal sentencing guidelines, that was all taken away from the federal court. And it's a manifestation of what has happened to this country. You know, I talked at great length, I guess, maybe last week about the Fourth Amendment and what has been done to it. But I think in my conversation with Scott calling in from Massachusetts, that, you know, we also established the fact that what was done, what's been done to the Fourth Amendment in this presidency is not, it's not a dramatic departure from what the Fourth Amendment was in the first place. If you go back to a case called U.S. v. Leon, I think in the 1970s, that's where the Supreme Court crafts a good faith exception to the Fourth Amendment for police powers. And it's been a slow and steady gutting of the most fundamental rights that apply not to corporations, but the most fundamental rights that apply to individuals, where the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Sixth, and the Seventh are concerned. Now, the First Amendment remains as a life support system for the religion industry, and that's it. The Second Amendment, you've got the NRA out there hollering that, you know, we can't regulate guns inside cities because it's a slippery slope down the road to keeping Joe Bob from blowing away deer. So the Second Amendment, it's okay. But when you get into the real meat of the privacy issues and the personal freedom issues, that stuff's been, yeah, it's been on a slippery slope since the Kennedy assassination. You're absolutely right, George.
Well, I believe I think they already had a big foothold on our country before Kennedy got it. I believe Kennedy and his brother, they were going to make America America, and I love those two guys.
Well, when Dwight David Eisenhower leaves office as the President of the United States and does so warning America about, you know, we talk about it now and we call it the military-industrial complex, but that was not his original draft. His original draft was a warning to America about the military-industrial congressional complex. This guy was a rock-ribbed Republican. This guy, saying that there was a health care debate as far back as Eisenhower. Oh, no, we can't do that. It wouldn't be good for America. Blah, 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 blah. Same crap that McCain's talking now. He talked then. Where the CIA couldn't get Harry Truman to go along with toppling the government of Mossadegh in Iran, the democratically elected government of Prime Minister Mossadegh, Eisenhower went right along with it. You know, he was a Republican's Republican. Okay, and this guy at the end of his term is warning America about the primrose path we're going down to, in the national security state and a state of permanent war for permanent peace. So yeah, no, it was already going before JFK got there, and the argument can certainly be made, and you've made it convincingly that John Kennedy might have changed things, and it is the seminal turning point of the last. Since the atomic weapons exploded over Japan to end the Second World War, it is that place. Just as the assassination of Abraham Lincoln was the seminal turning point that changed how the South would be shaped after the Civil War. And we can only sit and wonder, and maybe ponder that there's an alternate universe somewhere where it goes differently, and wonder what it looks like.
You know, there's another thing I don't want to forget to add, and that is there's a video out there, and it has Jack Ruby, and he's walking down the hallway with some reporters. He's all dressed up real nice, and they're walking down the hallway, and the reporter asks him a question, and Ruby says, "This would have never happened had they picked a different vice president." And the reporter was kind of shook up, and he said, "Well, what do you mean by that?" And Ruby said the answer is sitting in the White House.
You know, my father went to his grave periodically saying, and I remember hearing this from childhood forward, George, LBJ had John Kennedy killed.
And there's a movie out there, and it's kind of long, but it's got a lot of good stuff in it, and it's about a lot of stuff. It's about the CIA, it's about the Kennedys, but it's called Evidence of Revision. And in that first segment, it has that Jack Ruby. So Jack Ruby's pointing the finger at Johnson, that guy that died not too long ago, a couple of years ago. Is it E. Howard Hunt?
Yeah.
He gave a deathbed confession that LBJ did it. Okay, and then here's LBJ saying the CIA and Big Oil did it. And so that's exactly right. It was CIA, George Bush, Big Oil, and Johnson that murdered Kennedy and has taken us down this crap hole road for the last 50 years. And, you know, the way I'm looking at, I had all this faith in Pelosi and everybody. And now I'm almost convinced that our entire government is 100% fixed. And like right now, they got rid of all, the media got rid of all the good guys, Kucinich and Gravel and all the good people. They smashed and obliterated and they got rid of them.
Yeah, Dodd opened his mouth and then he was gone. Yeah.
Yeah, so everyone good was gone and then we had just all the losers. And to me right now, we have a choice. And the choice is, it's kind of like if you go in a restaurant, you're going to like a restaurant to get a hamburger, and they say, well, all we got is horse dung. We got the dry horse dung or we got the wet horse dung. And that's kind of our choice right now.
Well, see, I'm not there yet. I recognize that no president is going to, without just absolutely trouncing the Constitution like George Bush has done, bring about profound, really, really a sea change in the country. But there is such a difference between, and this is not me saying, George, that Barack Obama is some sort of, wild-eyed progressive man of the people. He isn't, okay? He's a millionaire. He's the smallest of the millionaires, but he is a millionaire. But there is such a bright line difference between who you get on, for instance, on the Supreme Court, between Barack Obama and John McCain. There's a bright line difference in terms of the beginnings of the healthcare debate between Barack Obama and John McCain. Barack Obama is still talking about a healthcare, it's not even a healthcare solution. It's a health insurance solution, and thereby not a solution. But there's a greater likelihood of moving toward universal health care, toward, under Barack Obama than there is John McCain. There's a difference, there's certainly a difference in Iraq and whether or not there will be a war with Iran, between the two. So, I won't quite get on board, with your characterization there, but I certainly understand where it comes from, and it comes from a very frustrating place that I hang out in a lot too. So, I hope you see where I'm coming from.
And I do see, in fact, I was where you were. But I've put a lot of hours in research and looking into things, and I just kind of see how it's been fixed since Johnson took over our country. But one of the other things I wanted to show you, and you're going to see this in the next few months, is this whole thing that we've been watching, this Hillary, Obama, and back and forth, and McCain. This is all a show to wear everybody out, to make everybody hate the system.
Oh, I was sick of it in February.
This is what everybody's watching right now is Plan B. Because Plan A, the plan that they really want to carry off, is Mayor Bloomberg, Governor Schwarzenegger. That's who our next president and vice president. That's who they want. Now, maybe something won't work out right, and then they'll jump back to the Obama, McCain. But you watch. These two guys are going to step out in about 2 or 3 months from now and go, oh, we just can't let the country go this way.
Yeah, but somebody's going to have to amend the Constitution for it to be Schwarzenegger.
You don't think this Congress would do it?
But it's not just the Congress. The Congress can't just pass. It's got to pass by 2/3 in the House, and it's got to pass by 2/3 in the Senate, and then it's got to pass by 2/3 in each of the individual legislatures of the several states, and 2/3 of them to boot.
You see, Mayor Bloomberg is going to say, "Well, look, our country's in a mess," and Mayor Bloomberg's a real criminal. He's going to say that the country's in a mess, and I have to pick the person who I think can pull us out, and that's Arnold. And so you're going to just have to change that. And they're going to change it. I guarantee you they're going to change it.
Well, see, I go back and forth because I've brought this up on a number of occasions that my personal guess is, and I think it's fairly informed, I go back to the 2004 convention when the pool coverage news cameras accidentally slipped over to the side of the stage where there was a little cancerous cluster of people who had Jeb 08 signs, George. Okay? And I mean, the cameras hit it and then it was gone. I mean, I sort of shook my head and went, oh, did I see that? But I did. remembering that and knowing how clannish the Bush family are, and knowing that while Jebby has said he didn't want to run in 08, his mommy and his daddy and he have all said, but maybe sometime in the future, plan A is always to get a Republican elected. But plan B is, if we can't, then we will poison the Democrats' administration so utterly thoroughly that he can't help but be a Carter. And then in 2012, the country will be ready for another Bush, because we will have demonized the Democrat for so long they will have forgotten George. And so my guess is you get Jeb Bush in 2012 running. And if by some miracle McCain happens to win this election, then you can expect to see Jeb Bush finagled onto the 2012 John McCain reelection ticket, because the Bushes want to be American Caesars. They want to be the Royal House of Bush, George. It's like something out of Dune. They think that they have bred for this over generations. You know, remember, Barbara, that hateful old beast, George's mother, is related to Franklin Pierce, one of the more forgettable presidents of American history. Yeah, they think that, you know, they'd love to talk about people on welfare, and it's another entitlement program. The biggest family, the biggest entitlement program in the United States is the power that the Bush family thinks that they are entitled to. They've never earned an honest, they've never worked an honest day in their lives. They've never earned an honest living. They have sucked at the public tit for generations now, and they think that that is their position. And in fact, they want to replace the Kennedys in the memory of America as the American dynasty.
No, we need to, somehow we need to get power back, and we need to get all these signs down off Reagan Airport and off George Bush CIA, and these are criminals.
The only thing I want to name after Reagan and Bush, there's a little building in Parkersburg, West Virginia, George. It is, in fact, the very headquarters of the United States Bureau of the Public Debt, and I want it named for Reagan and Bush.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That's the only thing that needs their names on it.
And you knew about Prescott Bush.
Oh, gosh, yes.
His bank being shut down by FDR?
Yeah, the Brown Brothers Harriman, sure.
Well, it was shut down by FDR under the Trading with the Enemy Act.
Yes, and Prescott Bush was busted for it, paid a fine, and it's there for anybody here cares to research it in the National Archives. But God knows the for-profit media ain't interested in going in the building.
He was financing the Hitler war machine?
Yeah, Fritz Thyssen.
Right.
He was referred to as Hitler's angel.
You know, I've seen so many pictures of Eisenhower with Prescott Bush sitting in his lap. I mean, that's what it looks like. They're sitting so close together.
Yeah.
Just two of them signing papers, and it's scary.
Yeah, they're buddies. Sure. Absolutely.
Well, anyway, Building 7, all four corners in free fall. Two little tiny fires. You know, all four, big 50-story building, all with 3-4 inches thick steel, maybe 50 columns, and all four corners in the exact same second with a little crimp in the middle, and all four corners come down in free fall. And on the two big towers, one last thing. I heard a structural engineer, and she said, if this was a pancake collapse, then each one floor hit another floor, it'd be like kaboom, kaboom, kaboom when these floors hit each other. So she said, say kaboom 115 times in 10 seconds. So you can't do that. So she said, here, I'm going to make it easy for you. Say boom 115 times in 10 seconds. So you can't even do that. That's how fast these floors were coming down, 10 floors a second. So the floors were actually being removed below the debris field. And if I had more time, I'd tell you how they took out the core of those two buildings, because I believe I know how they did it.
Well, it's possible. Anything is. The question is, you know, the evidence of that crime, though, George. And in any prosecution, one must present evidence. The weakest of cases is the case that is tried on circumstantial evidence. the evidence of the crime has already been shipped back to the United States in the form of the steel framing of cheap goods from China. And if that is how it happened, then far more than how they did it, the beauty is in the cover-up.
But I don't think they're going to... I think there is so... They screwed this up so badly, and there's so much evidence out there that I believe this is going to catch them. And I believe it already is. I can, when I'm not talking to people, I can tell. So many people already know. And it's coming. And this is what's going to bring them down.
Well, it frankly remains to be seen. An email just rolled in saying that, Jeb Bush is indeed the future leader of Bush Inc. It only makes sense. And that's how they keep their ass out of the hoosegow too, George. By electing John McCain, who will, if called upon, will do the Gerald Ford thing for George Bush just like Jerry did it for Nixon. You know, pardon him for crimes that he hasn't even been charged with. Okay? And then it's nothing for Jebby to perpetuate that. That is the desperate urge, and that is the desperate requirement that motivates the Republican Party at this point in time. So, that's... I think there is an importance to electing Barack Obama that perhaps some of us are not necessarily taking into that it's easy to overlook, I guess, is what I'm saying. But I've really enjoyed the conversation. Don't be such a stranger, George.
Well, thank you for having me, Bob.
Oh, it's fine.
Thanks for the great job you're doing.
It's absolutely a pleasure to talk to you. Take care.
Okay, you too.
Bye now.
Bye.
Love hearing from folks we haven't heard from in a while. Let's try this line. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, how you doing there, Bob?
I'm doing pretty good. Is this Sarge?
This is Sarge. I was just listening to that guy, and I love his passion. You know, I wish he had spent about half that time or a quarter of that time researching all of these things and look into the Katrina issue.
I don't doubt that he likely has, Sarge.
I hope so, because, we need to get this out more, because this is a crime that's actually going on as we speak. It'll be going on tomorrow, CNN did a report, and you can find it online, and this lady was a feature in this report, and she's going to be on my radio show Sunday, but it tells about $85 million worth of material.
Yes, that's actually in my stack for tonight, Sarge. That everything from basic living supplies to supplies for setting housekeeping back up to necessities for daily living. Yeah, $85 million of it just sat there, and FEMA just recently gave it away. We don't need this.
Stuff is documented,
Yeah, yeah,
And you've been, thank God for the Horn and Novem, KPHX, because these things are not getting out there. And these are the areas that you go to if you want to hear these stories. The Horn, Novem, used to be Air America, but, we've got to spend time on Katrina, because Katrina is probably the biggest failure, the biggest scandal, even exceeding 9/11, because what's been going on for years there has been going on right under our nose, and there have been more people die from it. There's going to be more people dying. The formaldehyde and the trailers that have poisoned children for generations will continue on long after we're gone. And this is all going on under our very nose, and we don't pay attention to it. And, I get frustrated because I try so hard to get this message out, and it's so met with.
Well, the problem that you deal with, Sarge, is a problem that everyone doing what we're all trying to do faces. And folks like Joe Bagent have commented on it. Other people have commented on it quite well also. Let me just look here. There was a It was a link that was sent to me almost a month ago. I think our buddy Suzanne sent it, and it came from Truth Out and was reprinted. I'm looking for it here real quick, just a sec. Yeah, it's a piece by Tom Sullivan called The Elitism Thing, and it references the fact that what we are doing, you know, you talk about your frustration, Sarge. I don't think there's anybody out there who listens to liberal radio or progressive radio or pays attention to liberal or progressive media who is not intimately familiar with the horror that is and continues to be the attempt to come back from Katrina, something that shouldn't have been, well, it shouldn't have been the problem that it is in the first place. It becomes exponentially worse as time goes on because of the continuing failure of an administration that frankly doesn't give a damn. Okay, but the problem just
keeps snowballing because they, I've said this before, proven true, it has lasted for almost 3 years now, and they have done things in the area. I saw it when I lived in it. They would do things first in the area and then turn around and see it work and put it into a national area as well.
But what I'm getting at, Sarge, is that the problem is not getting the message out to the choir that we talk to. And I'm not being demeaning of the audience when I say that. These are caring, committed people who are taking the time to get the information, to find the information, to share the information. We got to find a way. It's not me, and it's not you, and it's not anybody listening to Nova M or The Horn who isn't thinking about Katrina, okay? It's that guy who's working three damn jobs a day. Okay, it's the guy who's pouring 16 hours of his life every day into an attempt to keep his head above water, to keep his kids from flunking out of school, who's one transmission problem away from going on unemployment if there's unemployment to be had. It's that guy that we got to get through to. Because see, when he goes to work, the boss will put the radio on, and the radio will invariably be, if it's not tuned to some inane jukebox pissant poor music channel, it'll be tuned to some right wing hate monger who will say that it was the fault of the people who wouldn't get off their lazy asses and leave when they knew Katrina was coming. There are 2,005. I'm not yelling at you, Sarge, but you just put me up on my soapbox, brother. There are 2,000.
Man, I love it.
There are 2,570 hours of right wing radio every damn day in this country. Okay. 2,570 hours of people saying that the bodies floating in the fetid, stinking water of Katrina was their own fault. 2,570 hours. Divide that by 24. How many days of hate radio is there every day?
Then you got that freak like Neil Borks who said, the reason they didn't save themselves, they were sitting on their fat asses waiting to get their next government check.
Right, exactly. And the guy that's busting his ass 16 hours a day, that's what he hears. That's what he hears.
Meantime, you got John McCain sitting there drawing 100% disability service connected pension, drawing the salary of a senator, has lived on government welfare all his life, and then someone like myself who gets hurt serving in the military has to take SSI because they don't get enough disability rating because Reagan cheated them out of it. And then this son of a gun gets triple dips, and they're telling me because I'm on SSI, they have to count my $117 a month, 10% service-connected disability against my total I'm allowed of $630.
Oh, hell yeah.
I would be double dipping, man.
Yeah, and don't go out and get a minimum wage job or anything because they will cut your ass off. Okay?
That's right.
But there's John McCain hauling in $58,000 a year on disability and making a senator's salary and they're still paying him?
Right.
Square that up, Sarge, because I damn well can't.
I can't get my $117 a month for my disability, which was supposed to be 50% disability, but Reagan screwed that up. And then they turn around and tell me that we have to count that $117 a month against you on your 632 that we allow. 632.
You can't. Oh yeah, Sarge, I will never remember. I was still on terrestrial radio when this one broke, and it just I just about put my head through a window over it when the so-called Medicare Part D prescription drug plan came through. I remember the calculation that involved a woman who got 70. She got $700 a month Social Security, and then she got her Medicare prescription D. Part D prescription plan come through, so the federal government cut her food stamps down to $15 a month because of the additional income she was getting from the prescription benefit. You know, what a great big gaggling handful of pure brass-bound self-made sons of bitches we are talking about here.
All right. Well, Bob, look, I've rambled here, but I appreciate everything that you and the Horn does to keep this Katrina issue alive, and I hope you'll post a link to that video and people go check it out, because this is just one hellaciously awful story, and it needs to be seen. And the fact that it aired on CNN was quite surprising.
When you're talking about CNN, Sarge, you got to remember that even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then, you know.
Well, they did wear it in the middle of the day when no one was watching. So.
Well, there's that,
but,
too. Yeah.
Bob, thank you so much, and I'm going to let you go, and you guys keep up the good work, and people keep the Horn alive.
All right, thank you so much, Sarge. You take care now.
Thank you.
Bye now. Our buddy Sarge calling from Arizona, formerly of the Gulf Coast, and host of a show on Nova M every Sunday morning. Check it out. Let's see. Keep it rolling. Phones are lit up tonight. I may not get to the stack at all. Oh, okay. Hi, who have I got?
Good evening, Mr. Kincaid.
Hey, David, what's up, brother?
Yeah, I was listening to you talk about the impeachment thing, and I just thought I'd throw this in. On Tom Hartman today, he had Peter Yarrow from Peter, Paul, and Mary, and they asked about impeachment, and you know what he said? He said, you can't do it to the country.
You know, I really try to keep the fun words out of my vocabulary, because I do respect the fact that there are moms and dads out there listening with their little children. But what?
But
I hate that crap, David, because the Washington Post and Katherine Graham pulled that garbage back when Reagan got caught red-handed with his filth in the Iran-Contra affair, and they can't. You know, it's only been a few years since Watergate. The American people can't stand another constitutional crisis. That's what the people in the silk stockings and the bespoke Savile Row suits said to America when Ronald Reagan was caught red-handed violating the Constitution and about a half a thousand laws. Ah, the American people can't stand you. Do it to the American people. You know, you want to stop doing something to the American people? Stop screwing me at the gas pump, you know?
Bob, we got to go in the dumb room. We got to go in the dumb room with the people, and this is what happens. And you know what? There's a point to this, because since we don't own most of the media, let's face the facts on that. We don't own most of the radios, most of the radio airwaves, let's face the facts on that. Okay, let's say Dennis Kucinich gets it passed. Immediately, we're painting Barack Obama into a corner. This is why people, this is why issues like this, they're the hardest choices to make, and I don't have an answer for you. So Barack Obama, his people have already come out. They're not going to turn around and say this. They're going to say, because they want those Republicans that they picked up. They're afraid to lose them. And this is something that a lot of people don't, they think about it, but they don't really think about it. And that's the problem. I mean, that's the choice we make. So, and then, okay, let's say we do go through the trials. What's really going to happen is they're just going to say they're playing politics constantly over and over again since we don't own the airways. We won't have any effect on that. So my thing is this. This is what I was telling about John last night. I know it makes people angry, but this is the truth. This is the truth right here. The we are doing the ultimate sacrifice, which is this. Kucinich has stood up. He said what we all know is true. And it's on the record forever. It's there. There's nothing else we can do about it.
I don't know if I can swallow a pill that bitter, David.
Bob, I mean, listen to what. Go back and listen to what the Obama campaign said. I mean, they've put it out clearly out in the water. We go out and do that. They're immediately going to say that they're not a part of this.
Fine, let them deny it. You know, that's fine.
Okay. All right, but then Bob, then comes the other thing. Okay, say then they come out. The right wingers come out with the hatchets. And that line works, Bob. That's why I say when we go in the dumb room, Bob, it's a different universe. And the playing politics line works. I have a friend who's brilliant at a lot of different things, in computers, in salesmanship. But when it comes to politics, and he says the playing politics line, and I say, but what about the Republicans? You know what his answer is? He'll say, well, they do that to a degree, but, and I'll say,
but what?
No, but see, that, and then he'll just say, but see, that's the way I see it. And I really can't, really fault him, because he says that's the way he sees it, and that's pretty much the end of it. What am I to do? I explain my point of view, he explains his point of view, and that's that. But see, the problem that people don't understand is we're gonna go to the impeachment table. We're going to do that immediately. The media is never going to be on our side on this. It's going to be just a whole crap storm. And yes, it's going to take us down that road, but are we going to get what we want? You know what? Probably the answer is not, because we don't own any of the media. So again, and we don't have any of the leaders on our side, because they want DC to continue to work that way. That it's always worked. So we're at a quandary, Bob, and the quandary is this. I'm siding with the guy from Peter, Paul, and Mary. I'm siding with Barack Obama on this issue, because Dennis Kucinich has come out. He said it, and that's all I can see. That's all I can see happening right there.
Well, I understand the point. I get it. I get it 110%. There is... Oh, brother, here goes Bob telling another story.
It's those dumb people, Bob. I tell you, you know what? It would be so much easier if
But wait, David. Wait, please. Yeah. Those dumb people. I've been there, too, and, you know, and I've asked those questions, but I'm really, really trying to change my ways. And if you've been listening this evening, you know the question I'm about to ask.
Yeah.
How do you call somebody dumb who is engaged in a single-minded... desperate attempt just not to get run over in this country, and doesn't have the time to do the reading and the research that you and I are talking about? Is that dumb, or is that...
I'll put it to you this way. The guy that...
Although I love the concept of the dumb room. I just love that.
how about the II room, the intentionally ignorant, okay? I know that might... That's a little bit more progressive, okay?
Okay.
The intentionally ignorant room. My problem with talking to my friend is he's been ingrained with his philosophy and his ideologies, and all these people have been ingrained with their philosophy and their ideologies. I can't change that. I can only point out examples and say, this is what I tell him. I say, just watch. This is another tactic I use. I don't want you to agree with me. I don't. I said, I want you to disagree with me, but I also want you to think about what I'm saying, and don't change your position, but just look around you and see what's happening, and see who's really getting, because he goes into the whole taxes issue, and he goes into the whole, you know, the entire free market and employer rights and small business and all that. He thinks that, for some reason, he thinks that Republicans are going to protect him when it comes to a small business, which is just insane.
I know.
And you know, I just have this.
No, look, David, let me stop you for a minute, okay?
Yeah.
I know there's not going to be an impeachment.
Yeah.
And way down in the pit of my gut, my tormented, tortured gut, it makes things a little bit worse. because, and I say this in a great in all the sincerity that I can muster, I have certain values and certain ethics that I try to live by.
Mm-hmm.
And I am busting my ass to do the right thing and instill the right things in my kids. And I resent the fact that I have to sit here and say to thousands and thousands of people that I know the Constitution is going to be further neglected.
Yeah.
Out of nothing other than political motivation. I don't say that as a Republican. I don't say that as a Democrat. I, by God, say that as an American citizen. And it pretty nearly brings tears to my eyes even having to say it. But there's a passage in one of my favorite books, To Kill a Mockingbird, where Atticus Finch, the father, the moral, you know, pillar, says, I have to be the same man at home that I am on the street. And I do, and you do, and we do.
Right.
But Nancy Pelosi doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that POS Mitch McConnell doesn't. And Steny Hoyer doesn't. And John Boehner doesn't. And Harry Reid doesn't. George Bush doesn't. No, the people who live in that rarefied congressional Washington atmosphere don't. And they can sit there and chuckle quietly to themselves when Andrea Mitchell says, well, that's redneck country. It's almost Appalachia. As if you can hear the God-blessed banjos be tuning up and the jug band starting and the theme from Deliverance playing in the background. It's almost Appalachia.
Yeah.
But we gotta live a law-abiding life, David.
Yeah.
We gotta live a life under the law because it's the only thing that stands between us and anarchy, and you know what? It ain't necessarily a good idea, the anarchy.
Yeah,
But the anarchists are the ones who are calling the shots in Washington and who are living as they see fit, who have the best socialized medicine that that planet Earth can offer and the American people can pay for, who don't pump their own damn gas, who don't buy their own food, who believe Ben Bernanke when he says, well, I don't think a recession is coming. Ask the schlub who's pumping the $5 a gallon gas in California now whether there's a recession coming. Ask the guy who the family who got thrown out of their subprime bubble house whether there's a recession. You know, Harry Truman said, when it happens to your neighbor, it's a recession. When it happens to you, it's a depression. And he was right.
So
please understand. I mean, I'm not arguing with you for the sake of arguing.
Yeah, I know.
I know you're right. I know Jesus, God Almighty. I know in my heart of hearts. I know at the base of my soul. I know when my eyes close at night that there will not be an impeachment. I know that lawlessness will run amok. And stomp through what used to be a great nation in big old fat combat boots. I know that, but by God, for the rest of my days, I don't have to like it.
I hear you, and to end on a note, I have a recommendation of a film that I was looking for so long. I'd only seen it once on IFC a long time ago. This film. Directed by Mike Leigh. I doubt you've seen it, Bob. It's an amazing film. It's called Make It.
No, I haven't seen it.
And it's David Thewlis stars in it, and he was the guy who played Lupin from Harry Potter. And Thewlis floors the audience by it's a whole just dialogue-driven character, to-the-walls character piece of England. And how everything is falling around, and everyone he's coming into contact with, he's telling them more and more about the dystopia. And it's so ahead of its time, Bob. It was made in '93, and he just goes on and on. And Thewlis, he actually got the Cannes Film Festival Award for Best Actor. I mean, he just riveted, just hammered everything. And a lot of people don't know about it. And it took a while for the DVD to surface, but. Man, it's an amazing film. If you just listen to like the piece on where he talks about the Bible and the Revelations, you'd be like, oh my God, because when he starts talking about the politics of England and everything that's happening around him, he's ranting to a level that's like on a level of like Bill Hicks. But then it's he has that English perspective, and when this film came out, I mean, people were just in awe. It's an amazing sight to see it. I mean, and it goes for like
I'll put it on the list.
90 minutes. Not more, Bob. I'll send it to you.
I trust your taste in this stuff. You haven't seen it.
Look for it in your mailbox. And for everyone, it's called Naked, and it's directed by Mike Lay. You can probably get it at half.com.
Okay, is it Make It or Naked?
Naked.
N-A-K-E-D.
Yeah, the best way to type it would be Naked Mike Lay at Amazon. You could probably get it on the VHS for like $3 if you're really hard up for cash. And it's just an amazing piece. And a lot of people should worship the ground of Thewlis. And I don't say this about many actors. I say Al Pacino, Joe Montana in House of Games, Robert De Niro.
I knew De Niro would be on the list.
Yeah, Orson Welles. Those types of people. But Thewlis, man, you got to see it because it's so right here. We're right here at that moment of what he's talking about. It doesn't matter if you're watching the scenes of London and he's weaving in and out. That's the other thing. The camera's totally focused on him, Bob. And he's just going down the street, and you're seeing all these things around. You're seeing the shadows of all of the streets of England, and it's just constantly. Anybody that he comes into contact, he just starts berating and just goes right at the jugular. But at the same time, he's making a lot of sense, but he's losing it at the same time. It's a crazy film. People need to see it because it speaks so much to our times right now.
Cool.
Naked, Mike Lay.
Okay, cool. Thanks for the recommendation. David, I'm going to run on now.
All right, later.
Talk to you later, brother.
Bye.
Bye. So we got about, 25 minutes left in the program. Bear with me for a minute, okay? I just got some stuff that got to be said. Because there's stuff that just eats at me, and I let it eat at me. You know, last night I talked about that, the Daily Mail out of the UK, that article on how John McCain treated his first wife. And, you know, my curse is that I try to, the whole walk a mile in my moccasins thing, I try to live that way. And as a consequence of that, last night in the chat room, I typed something, and ever since it flowed out of my brain, down my neck, and through my arms, and out my fingers, and onto the keyboard, and onto the screen, it's been on my mind. We opened the the program got started tonight with this business about how the evangelicals are going to be just fine with John McCain, and, you know, he doesn't have anything to worry about because the extremely religious are going to fall in line, march lockstep, and, you know, be good little fascists and vote the way good little fascists are supposed to vote. And like I said, I've been saying that all along. But when they get in line, and when they march lockstep, and when they goose step to the polling place, I have some questions for them. And they are questions based upon my own history and my own experience. John McCain walked out on his wife after she had been reduced from the beauty that she had been to a wreck of a human being who required some 30 surgeries to try to recover from an auto accident. And I want the evangelical, extremely religious voters that guy from the Gallup organization referred to, I want them to square that up for me. I want them to make sense of that for me. Because I remember very vividly, my mother came home from the hospital long about my 10th birthday. She had just had a radical mastectomy, resulting from malignant breast cancer. You know how to use the Google. Go find out what the survival rates are for a woman with malignant breast cancer in 1973. They were not good. And even though my mother was facing death, she came home from the hospital in January 1973 and began putting together plans for her little boy to have his 10th birthday party. Now, the ladies in the audience are probably more conversant with the idea of a radical mastectomy than the guys are. Most of you, because you are liberal, because you are progressive, because you are intelligent and informed, probably know to one degree or another what it involves. In the case of my mother, it involved the entire removal of her right breast, as well as all the lymph tissue, all the way down her right side, and a significant amount of the musculature in her right arm. And I couldn't help thinking, as I contemplated John McCain, that filthy POS walking out on his first wife, and yes, I will judge him for it. In that instant, I developed a sense of regard and respect and renewed love and admiration for my parents. My father was a foreman on a silicon furnace, and he worked rotating shifts. One week he'd work 4 to 12. The next week he'd work 8 to 4. The next week he'd work midnight to 4. So that his world was in a constant state of upheaval, and he never knew when he was supposed to sleep and supposed to be awake. But he kept at it day in and day out. And he kept at it even when my mother was undergoing surgery, because frankly, he couldn't stop. If he stopped, everything went to hell. So what he did stop was sleeping. And every instant that he was not at work, he was at my mother's side. And I feel quite confident in saying that never, no, not once, did it enter my father's mind to bug out on my mom. She had been disfigured, profoundly, painfully, in a way that I'm told that, you know, she never went to counseling. She didn't have a psychologist, no social worker, no psychiatrist, no support group. It's 1973, everybody! And she had been maimed in order to save her life. And then came the cobalt treatments. And they burned her like a French fry. The worst sunburn you have ever seen, imagine it 100 times worse, and you get an idea of what my mother's chest looked like as they were trying to burn out any last vestige of the malignancy. And at no time did my father contemplate leaving her. And while I would not presume to speak for a woman, and I do not have the perspective to do so, I have read things, and the loss of an entire breast is a traumatic moment. And as a child, one doesn't like to think of the sexuality of one's parents. but I know it had to enter into the considerations somewhere along the way. But they hung together. They stayed together. They took a personal oath. You know, the way a member of Congress takes an oath to the Constitution, they took an oath to one another. In sickness and in health, for so long as we both shall live, until death do us part. And that oath to them was sacred. And I couldn't help thinking about them when I read about John McCain seeing greener pastures in the arms of a multi-millionaire, blondie-headed heiress who hadn't been maimed in a car wreck, who wasn't 4 inches shorter than she had been when they married, who wasn't full of bolts and plates and screws, and how John McCain bugged out. John McCain quit. John McCain left. John McCain walked. John McCain did not have the courage or the guts or the devotion of a furnace operator. He didn't have the dedication of a working class man. He didn't have the love that inhabits a working class family. And I need the right-wingers who are going to dutifully march lockstep straight out of their church and straight over to the polling place to vote for John McCain. I, by God, need them to square that up for me. I need it explained how he gets a pass. Marriages go bad. Marriages go south. Marriages end. Marriages fail for any number of reasons. Who was it, Dostoevsky, that said that all happy families are the same, but unhappy families are all unique in their various unhappinesses? Something like that. I understand all that. But you know what? That's not John McCain's situation. John McCain fled. John McCain was a coward. John McCain was a gutless POS who didn't have the balls to hang out and stick around when common decency and the oath that he swore to his wife called on him to do so. She endured surgeries. She endured loneliness. She endured fear. All of this happened to John McCain's first wife while he was in the POW camp. She even went so far as telling people who could get a message through not to get a message through to John McCain that she had been grievously injured, because she didn't want him to have that on his mind, because she said he had enough to worry about as it was. But he could not manifest the basic human dignity that it takes for one person to remain loyal and steadfast to another. And what happened to my mother, and what happened with my father, and the fact that they were able to stay together is in no wise unique. Even today, all over this country, through thick and thin, through miseries that would make John McCain collapse in a heap and sit in the corner and roll himself into a fetal ball and suck his thumb, American families get through. But not runaway John. not Runaway John. What I'm saying here has far more to do with my mom and dad than it does with John McCain. And it has so much more to do with why I honor the both of them and will continue to honor the both of them until there is nothing left of me. And why I will pass along the memories of the good times and the teaching and the life lessons and the hard work that they gave to me, I'll try to pass on to the children that Agnes and I have put on this earth. And why any evangelical, any extremely religious Christian who tells me that they're going to vote for John McCain will automatically have my undying disdain. Because it will not be something that I have foisted upon them. It will, in fact, be something that they have earned time and time over. Where else are you going to hear this? I ask that question a lot. You going to hear this on Air America? Hell no. You going to hear it on right-wing radio? I guarantee you're not going to hear it on right-wing radio. There's very few places on this planet that you're going to hear this, except right here on the Horn. This is the kind of straight talk that we do on the Horn. This is the kind of straight talk you get over at Nova M. But nowhere else, nowhere else will anyone dare to talk about the naked emperor that is John McCain. Because nobody else has the guts. And I think about that miserable piece of garbage, Andrea Mitchell. Because I view everything through the lens that my parents gave me. I view everything in terms of the hard work that they put forward all of their years. 82 for my father and 72 for my mother. And Barack Obama goes to a place like Bristol, Virginia, and Andrea Mitchell practically gets a case of the fantods, contemplating what Barack Obama could possibly be doing down there. I'm going to play it again. I want it heard again. I want to hear it again. I want to remember this every time I need a reason to loathe the for-profit media. You know, we've had a lot of mean, evil, hateful crap roll out of the for-profit media. But I really think this takes the cake.
Interesting images today. Barack Obama, Mark Warner, in Southwest Virginia. This is real redneck sort of bordering on Appalachia country. This is
real redneck bordering on Appalachia. What do you mean by that, Andrea Mitchell? What level of disdain are you manifesting? Real redneck country. Lord, I gotta send this one along to Joe Bajant, because Joe will have a... It's what we've been talking about. This is real redneck, sort of bordering on Appalachia country. It's not Northern Virginia, you know. And these are the voters he would not logically be, you know, gravitating to. Why wouldn't he? Why wouldn't a man who advocates things that are going to be meaningful for working class Americans not be logically, you know, gravitating to them? Why not, Andrea? You damn snob. You horse's rear end, Andrea Mitchell. It is as if rednecks and Appalachian people... Why don't you say hillbilly, Andrea? We know that's what you mean. It is as if we don't work. It is as if we don't matter. It is as if we do not exist to hear her tell it. Well, Andrea Mitchell, I'm a son of a couple of those hillbillies you have so little regard for. And I'm here to tell you, lady, that you are not, you would not be fit to hold the coat of my mother. And you and your husband are not fit to sit down and break bread with the people who raised me, or me and mine, lady. No, no. Not at all. But even that redneck she's talking about, that person who's almost Appalachian, that man, that woman comes home after busting their ass, and they get handed that. Or all day long they've heard Rush Limbaugh. Or maybe maybe on the drive home in the evening, they hear somebody like Michael Savage, for instance.
Obama is the most narcissistic candidate in the history of the presidency. Who is he? He's done nothing. Was he cured polio and cancer while I was sleeping last night? The guy's done nothing. In 2016, he says, I'll be wrapping up my second term as president. It's astounding to me. If the other side had one decent candidate, one real conservative, he would win 70-30. But because we have a retread, a Bush 3, it's going to be very doubtful as to whether or not we can avoid outright Marxism and Afro-Leninism.
Afro-Leninism. Afro-Leninism. That's what Barack Obama is. He's an Afro-Leninist. You got a pretty good idea now of how ugly it's going to get? It's going to get mighty ugly. And the race stuff and the cultural stuff is just going to ooze like some sort of viscous disease-infected fluid coming from the dead body behind the wall and leaching out under the floorboards as these right-wing dogs and pigs and filth lose it a little more every day. There were some topless photos out there of ninth-grade students at a school in New Jersey. They were suspended for distributing topless photos of their classmates. Bill O'Reilly had a hissy.
Unresolved problems segment tonight. More evidence of values problem among American young people. At Pascack Valley High School in northern New Jersey, 7 ninth graders, 14 and 15-year-olds, have been suspended for distributing topless photos of their classmates. As many as 20 young girls appeared that way. No charges have been filed, but the community is shocked. With us now is Inga Krugel, the mother of two girls attending the school. They were not involved. And Leslie Brody, a reporter for the Bergen Record, who broke the story yesterday. Leslie, begin with you. See, what I don't understand is how girls this young can be persuaded to put themselves at risk by posing. Understand is how,
oh, wait
how
a minute.
Girls this young.
Sometimes the photos are meant to stop at the recipient. Sometimes they're intended for distribution.
Do you think that 13 and 14-year-olds or 15-year-olds are smart enough to understand they put themselves at risk when they do this kind of behavior? The girls that you talk to, do they have any idea, or are they just stone cold dumb?
Well,
I don't know, Bill. Do you have any idea of what you were doing when you told that production assistant that you wanted to get her liquored up and do things to her with some falafel, buddy? Or are you just stone dumb? But that's not where we're going.
Some kids perhaps are looking for attention. Some see Lindsay Lohan doing this kind of thing and want to do it themselves. Some
but it's
are
a,
impulsive.
It's an amazing amount of kids involved, but there's 20 in an affluent school district. This isn't, you know, the inner city. You would.
There it is. This is an affluent school district. This isn't the inner city. Say it, Bill. Come on. What do you mean by inner city? Come on, Bill. Say it. Just like you were amazed when you went into that restaurant in Harlem and nobody was rioting. Long way to November. Long way. So that's pretty much the program for tonight. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. Sorry we didn't have any more, you know, straight-up kind of prayer meeting stuff, but I think this all ties in nicely anyway, don't you? Coming up, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program with the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold, with Strictly Confidential. After that, the horn section and John Fox with All Foxed Up, coming your way at midnight Eastern Time. And all of that will continue to come your way as long as we can make it come your way. And that is entirely dependent upon you. If you listen to these programs, if these programs mean something to you, then we need your support. Because otherwise the lights go off and there's no power to the mics. Thank you to those of you who already contribute. You will never know the fullness to which we appreciate what you do. And how gratifying it is, and how grateful and how thankful I am that you understand the necessity of creating this kind of medium that can battle back against 2,570 hours of right-wing filth like what you just heard every day. You are standing in the front lines, and I'm proud to be shoulder to shoulder with you. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know. Thanks to the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, who partially sponsor every program on the horn. You can be part of the solution to mountaintop removal by going to crmw.net and joining Coal River Mountain Watch. You don't have to live in southern West Virginia to know that you are downstream from everything that's happening there. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. If you go to whiterosesociety.org, you'll see that he has a fundraiser going on too. If you value the horn, you value Ben Birch, and he needs your help as well. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.